right. Thank you all for the special Ways and Means and Public Works Committee meeting. Really only one agenda, which is the capital improvement program. Does somebody want to start off with an overview, or do you want to just run through?
Yeah, and the budget and public works team is in our conference room trying to sign on, having some connectivity issues. But I did ask Natalie how you all wanted to kind of operate this. Happy to walk through each one or whatever you want to do.
All right, Legislator Archer.
The only thing I was going to suggest, and either way, is that maybe we want to start at the back and go forward, because it seems like a lot of the meat is on the back end of the capital plan, all the things that I think we wanted to chat about, and most of the new initiatives. Yes, they're interspersed throughout, but for the bulk of particularly ARP money, it's all at the end. So just a point, just something to think about. I don't care. I'm just bringing it up.
We're good either way.
Mark, how long do you think for the others to sign on? Oh, you got them? Okay, never mind.
They're actually on. Yep.
Yep, I see it now. Okay. All right, well, Legislator Archer, we'll go, since nobody else seems to have any other ideas for this. We'll start at the back then. Is there a page you want to start specifically on, Legislator Archer?
I just do the whole list in reverse, so which would start with UCAT rooftop solar.
Okay. So if I could really, really quickly, Chairman, just bring everybody up in speed. This is like the second or third of these joint meetings that we've had, and typically we've just ran through all the project and really just spent most of the time on the new projects wherever legislators have questions. I think it's a good idea that we go in reverse order. That's fine, and we have staff prepared. But if somebody wants to read them, anybody has questions, or we can give a quick overview. There's normally a 1 to 2 sentence project description. So.
Okay.
Tom.
Yes, Keith. Sorry. Go ahead.
That's okay. So I guess if it's a plan that has like no change, just tell us that when we get there. If it's just a minor change, like I think the more you can just inform us before we go down any rabbit holes, like this is the same one, nothing's changed from last year, that would be helpful, because I'm sure I don't remember.
Okay. I'm going to have to, because I can't see the packet and look at you all at the same time, so I'll switch in screens here for a second. So if somebody does have their hand up, just do me a favor, just shout out, because I'm not going to be looking at that screen for a while.
Hey, John.
Yes, sir.
I just want to make sure I got the right thing here. This is the one on the top that says committee budget to actuals as of September 30th, 2021. Do I have the right document here?
No, you don't, Dean.
No.
In the email reminder we just got today, might be your fastest way. It's the whole capital plan.
Yeah, the file is a 2022 through 2027 capital improvement program.
Yeah, I don't have no way of getting that.
It's also just online on the website, right?
Yeah, if you Google Ulster County budget, it's like the second document.
All right, that's all right. I'll be all right. We're good.
Legislator Bartels, if you wouldn't mind, can you just actually put the link in, or if somebody could put the link in the chat?
I'll do that. I was just about to.
Okay.
Thanks. Done.
Go ahead. Done? Okay. Thank you. All right. So it's going to be hard going in reverse, but I understand what you're looking for, Legislator Archer. So let's go to the...
If it's easier, I don't want to complicate it. If it's easier to buzz through the other stuff, however you want to do it, I just don't want to lose sight of... a lot of the meat is at the back end. So if we want to buzz through the other stuff, whatever's convenient for everybody. I don't want to make it difficult. Particularly if people are navigating between hard copy and online, it may be easier. So I just threw it out there.
I'm going to start at the back. If I do lose my place, though, just somebody please just point that out to me, because I am on digital 100%. I don't have paper printed out. So just, you know, keep that in mind. All right. So the UCAT rooftop solar project.
This is not a new project. We spent some money in design in prior years, with the bulk of the money to be spent in 2022.
Does anybody have any questions on that then?
I have a question.
Yeah.
So the $250,000 that's budgeted for 2022, that's for the full build out. That's what we expect.
Yes.
Yes.
Okay.
And it's state funded.
Third of New York State.
A third of it. Yeah.
There is an unfunded county share of $165,000.
Yeah.
Do we have a timeline on when we might be starting that?
Don, Rob, Brendan.
It's a project that's being facilitated by the Department of Environment, but I'm assuming they won't start anything before spring of next year. So I would imagine you'd probably start seeing resolutions and contracts in the early first quarter next year.
Thank you.
Next one, Ulster County Transportation Council.
Can I just interrupt for a second? Can caller 4113 please state your name for the record?
4113 is the sheriff.
Thank you so much.
And just mark.
This is planning studies. It's done every year. We typically include about $150,000 funding for the Transportation Council. It's 45,000 is the county share out of the 900,000 in funds.
Any questions on it? Thank you. All right, the Reuse Innovation Center.
This is a new project. I can let Chris Kelly get into it, but I believe Legislator Bartels is aware of this as well. Chris, do you want to, or Don?
So this was done in consultation with Department of Environment, Legislator Bartels. We're looking at funding a study for Reuse Innovation Center based on some, I believe this was a, was this a working group? I mean, I know it's part of the Green New Deal goals, but I believe this was also part of an external group that was looking into these.
Yes. Yeah, I can speak to it for a second. So a group of it's a group of legislators along with representation from the Department of the Environment and UCRRA and interested citizens working together on a zero waste implementation plan. And as part of that plan and that discussion, this is one of the recommendations that will be coming out from the plan. Which is the Reuse Innovation Center. And so this is this capital project funds the initial study into the creation of the capital.
Any questions? Okay. Legislator Litz.
Yeah, do we have a location for this?
We don't yet. There has been discussion, you know, again, it's just an advisory group, Legislator Litz.
So what's going to be the fruit of the study?
The ideal is that is eventually the idea of moving toward a siting and a creation of a project. I can get you the backup, Legislator Litz, that was presented at our, I call it a committee, but it's not really a committee, but the group that's going to be giving its work product to the legislature.
All right. I don't need a backup. I just want to know if you had a site and if it was going to be cohabitated with a solid waste facility or something like that.
There, you know, I don't think that this committee is in the position to say to recommend a site exactly, but again, there's a lot of backup information about these types of facilities. There's no immediate example in the Hudson Valley region, but I can get you backup information about similar in the Northeast in Massachusetts and also out West.
Thank you.
Sure.
All right. Next one is the community development program.
I think this capital started in 2020 budget. We have not expended funds at this point for this. Its intent was to help expand kind of shovel-ready projects for municipalities within their borders.
I have a question.
Walter?
Yeah, so can you explain why this sort hasn't started happening? Like, what are the delays? I know that I'm sure there are many municipalities that'd be very eager for this. So what is happening with this?
Yeah, I believe the planning department is still, and again, we pushed it out to 2023. The planning department, working with the Department of Economic Development, is still evaluating kind of a scoring sheet and a call for projects on this, which has not happened yet. And that just hasn't been put together.
So where is it? When would we see that scoring sheet? I mean, I think it'd be really important to prioritize this. And so when could we expect to see a final or at least a proposed scoring sheet?
I'll follow up with Dennis, but I think some of this work will be done side by side with, you know, this was a capital that was before, let's say, ARP. So I think a similar scoring sheet would be developed through the ARP process, and so we'll likely have something in the very near future. But I can follow up with Dennis.
I thought, if I may, Chairman.
Legislator Bartels was first.
Oh, sorry. Okay.
I don't mind deferring to Legislator Archer. I can go after.
Go ahead.
Thank you.
Thanks. As I recall last year, we conceptually agreed with the concept, but we are still waiting for criteria as to how programs would be evaluated, what's the criteria for consideration. So before anything gets rolled out, I hope that we're able to see all of those elements before something gets rolled out.
Absolutely, and that's why none of the funding is in the 2022 budget for this.
Okay. Thanks.
Oh, thanks. I'm sorry. I realized I was already recognized. Yeah. I'm kind of happy that it's not in the 2022, just because I do feel like we have to get an understanding and to just historically, this is similar to what was initially proposed under the previous administration. And at that time, you know, I might be speaking out of term, but just for the historical perspective, the pushback came from the legislature, if I recall, actually. You know, there's a lot of overlap because we're talking about water, sewer. We're talking about that's being considered in the ARPA funding, the economic development portion, the economic development and the housing, the assistance for affordable housing all are being considered as part of ARPA. So, you know, I think we should get through ARPA and we'll also have a better basis for this. So I'm happy to hear that that criteria is being developed, but I feel more comfortable with the 2023 start unless we get to the point where we're all comfortable with what the criteria is and this county spend.
I have sort of a question. Does anybody know if this would hinder the townships or villages from applying for grants on their own? I would think that this would, when the question is asked, is there other funding sources available? And this is potentially one of them. Could it potentially hurt their scoring? I don't know. It's just, you know, question, I guess, more than anything. And I don't need an answer now even. Moving on to broadband initiative.
Can I just ask one more question? Sorry.
Sure, go ahead.
You know, and that is, and I guess since we're a year out with it, just, you know, it seems like we're talking about a lot of things under one umbrella since depending on the type of project, we either need to have a bondable interest or it's coming under a special, you know, county purpose under applicable law authorizing state legislation. So I don't know if we want to keep it as one thought or separate it out depending on the types of projects that we're talking about. And that's just food for thought moving forward, especially since there's different authority and requirements depending on what type of project it is.
Let's say Fabiana.
Yeah, so let me get this, let me make this clear to myself. So there's not going to be any AR American funding money that's going to be in this 2022 budget for things like that, like the towns were wanting. Is that the way, do I understand that correctly?
No, this has nothing to do with ARP funds. So okay. this was a capital that pre-existed ARP. I know okay. You are, I think, part of a working group with Chris Kelly and yeah. The budget team on those other things.
Okay.
Broadband initiatives.
This was a project from previous year.
Okay. Best favorite tells.
So I know there's been discussion on this project of money being contained in the state budget regarding this. Do we have any update on whether or not that's happening? And because I know we talked about not wanting to duplicate services and, I mean, duplicate endeavors. Do we know?
So, if I may, the American Rescue Plan Act included $300 million plus to New York State, specifically for expansion of broadband services. Additionally, one of the bills on the federal side currently pending includes billions for broadband. So in a sense, the pandemic forced them to see that the problem is nationwide and it needs significant investment. So I think that we will have resources available.
And just as a follow-on to that, do we even have a sense, and this is something legislator Archer I know talked about at length, but in terms of a municipality by municipality analysis of where the holes are, do we yet have a solid sense countywide of where there are?
I wouldn't say on a county basis. I think at the state level, they've done some level of analysis. I think with the new legislation, though, they're forcing them to go further into that, and that's what the state is going to spend money on, so they can get a better sense of it. Is it last mile? Is it affordability? Where does the money need to go to best address the different gaps? It's not a one-size-fits-all for these things right now.
Just for clarification, if I may. Sure. Yeah, and I think that's helpful, but Legislative Archer can, I guess, could probably weigh in. But I know that there were some communities that did almost a poll by poll analysis. So if you talk to a certain community, they could tell you, 52 Smith Road has no connection. This spot has no connection, this spot. And then there are other communities that might know some of it anecdotally, but really have no idea because those people. So that's more what I'm looking for is how much of that, that detail do we have from community?
I don't believe we have that granular level of data at the county level, municipality by municipality. I know that different towns have taken different approach with their use of the cable fees that they collect, the franchise fees. So some have invested that in addressing these issues. Others have not taken that same approach. So their gaps and their problems are a bit more, I don't know. It's a bit sporadic as you move town to town. But I don't believe we have that data set.
We'll go to Legislator Walter, but just quickly to answer Legislator Bartels, that is correct. So town of Warsing, for example, I know that started when I was on the board, they got a very detailed, granular study done, but it's Time Warner or Spectrum or whatever they're called now. They're the ones who actually do it, and they're required to do it. They're required to give you their coverage, so you have to get it from them. So we could get the information. It is available, but I know Warsing is on top of it because it was just mentioned is that they use their franchise fees to continue to expand service. So Legislator Walter.
Thanks.
Sorry, the longer I wait, the more questions I have with this. So in terms of what's already been done, because for 2021, there's $140,000 cost. I'm not sure what's designed before a feasibility study. So I'll ask my questions all together. So we've come up with an amount, which would assume that we kind of know what a need is. Because my other question is, how much are we filling the need, or whether we should be upping this amount? And I talked about this a whole year ago, saying, are we really dealing with the broadband needs that exist, and that we should be, you know, doing more now, not less, not delaying this kind of thing. So I guess I wonder, how do we not know what we need to do? How do we know whether we're achieving a quarter of the need, a half of the need, three quarters of the need, so that we can actually move forward and prioritize this? And I know, you know, it obviously falls under ARP. There's going to be all this state, federal money. This is the time to really do this completely and not be pushing it further down the road. And so I guess the first part of the question is, what's been done so far? And how did you even get this amount? And do you even have a sense of how much this is dealing with our problem? Again, a quarter of our problem, a half of our problem, three quarters of our problem. Because you came up with the dollar sign for something.
I mean, in terms of what's been done, I can consult with the planning department on that, since they were in charge of that portion of it. I can only really speak to the funding that's coming. The New York State program that was funded. New York State spent a half a billion dollars on their initial effort, and now they're doing another mapping effort now, which will, I think, certainly address it on this part of your question, is getting a better sense of our issue. But I'll have to follow up with Dennis on the other parts of your question.
Okay, and I'll just say, like, this is this. First of all, there's several typos if you want to know that, and the other part is, this is like the same thing a year ago that it said. And especially with COVID and knowing this money, I feel like this should have evolved. I don't understand why this hasn't evolved in a year, but it's a high priority in our county.
Legislator Archer.
Thank you. It's only something I've been working on since I first came to the legislature, what, 10 years ago? The reality is nothing has been done. We don't have an assessment of the degree of challenges we have in our community. Every town has a different perspective, has used different ways in which they assess where their gaps are, but there has not been a holistic county approach, which we, through legislation, requested how many years ago? And we still have not received it. So as far as I'm concerned, this has been an ongoing problem that has never been addressed. Every year we have something in a capital plan, nothing's been done. I've been told 20 different ways from Sunday as to why the county hasn't approached this, and what we're waiting for the state. If we wait for the state, we might as well give it up, because we're not going to get any remedy to what we have as far as local challenges until we have a better handle on what our situation is. How do you put money in a budget if you don't even know the extent of your problem? So, you know, as far as I'm concerned, we've done nothing. We have it on there. Oh, it's a good bullet point. Oh, it sounds good. But nobody has done anything. The state has changed the way in which they look at it, from census data to census to block data. If the fact of the matter is, we've been talking about the same thing and correcting the same thing for over 10 years now, and we're no further along. I think COVID has really identified the fact that we have people in our community that do not have access. People think they might have access, may have some cell coverage, et cetera, but we have not addressed this plan. Just like we are behind the times on our communication plan for emergency services, this to me is as important as that, and we are at a disadvantage by not having our systems updated or even knowing where our problems are. So just by putting it in the capital plan and then putting some money towards it doesn't really say we have a plan for this. So I'd really like to hear, is there a plan? How did you come up with $1 million? How did you decide this is how we're going to spend it? We've heard nothing.
Deputy Executive Director, you're on mute.
Only 2 years in. Part of the funding is for a feasibility study. And again, that we have some experience with this, whether people like it or not, with the Ellenville Million. This project is for basically three wireless broadband projects. And so this is not like a universal last mile. We're not going to fix everybody in the county's problems, which is why it's important that the state and the federal government are also putting money behind this. But the funding, basically the budget estimates are based off of the work that was done in Ellenville and expanding that program out.
So why aren't we doing it now? Why are we waiting a year to do anything? Why isn't it in the 2022? If we know all this stuff, so why aren't we doing it? It's the same thing we've talked about for years, Mark. I have no disrespect intended, but this is the most frustrating. I know government moves slow, but this is ridiculous. And now we see the full impact with COVID on kids that didn't have access to schooling, online schooling, and we're still not addressing this. This is crazy.
All right. Let's say Bartels, then Kayla.
Thank you. So in terms of the American Rescue Act, $300 million, I think you said, Chris, to New York State, and the federal ARPA billions for broadband. So when are we going to know how that's being distributed and what for, and when is it going to flow down to the county? Do we have any sense?
I'll follow up with the intergovernmental people and see if I can get a sense on what the state program is.
Great.
The last announcement I saw from the state came in about May, just regarding what they're doing for mapping statewide.
Okay. And, you know, again, I'm sorry that I cannot recall what community it was. And again, Legislator Archer, you may be able to chime in and say which community it was that did that real granular analysis looking at basically home by home. And it didn't strike me when I heard about it, however many years ago that was, as something that was incredibly costly when done on a municipal level. So it may be that to get ahead of the game and to be ready for whatever monies are coming down, that we could consider spending, and I'm thinking real time here and out loud, but maybe we could consider spending some of the ARPA funds on partnering with communities and urging them to do the kind of study that whatever that one community was did, in order to know exactly where the holes are in their community, so that when this money comes down, we're not spending it on specific feasibility studies, but we're spending it on implementing fixes and changes.
All right, Legislator Cahill, then Hefner.
Thank you, Chairman. Maybe somebody can answer. Mark, you mentioned that this is for three specific projects. Could you tell us where those projects are, the municipalities that they are, or haven't you decided which three they're going to be yet?
Yeah, sorry, not three specific. It's funding three projects, again, similar to the work they did in Ellenville. That hasn't been decided yet. The feasibility study would identify the biggest priorities. You know, at one point it might have been Shongum, but they used their franchise fees to fix their problem, which maybe Legislator Bartels, that may be the municipality you're talking about. But, I mean, some municipalities have used franchise fees to fix their connectivity issues.
So then I'm guessing the $140K is the design. Is that the feasibility study? And then the 1-1 would be the implementation of the results for three separate projects? Is that fair?
Feasibility study and design. Yes. So designing the actual.
Okay. Gotcha. So the 1.1 is actually installing the three projects.
Yeah.
Okay.
Can we just be clear for a second though? We're not talking about hard cable lines. We're talking about wireless for this project.
Right.
Make sure everybody's clear on that, because hard cable, off the top of my head, and I just texted the supervisor from Worcester to find out for sure, but my recollection was it was about $100,000 per mile of road for cabling. So if this is wireless, and you keep mentioning Ellenville, I'm not even aware of this. I don't even know what we're talking about with internet in Ellenville.
There's a point to multi-point installation that was, I think it was off the Trudy Resnick Center,
yes.
But it's working off of one of our towers where we can broadcast a wireless signal to multiple wireless routers. I'm not sure. That is the one of the technologies we're looking at. Part of the issue with that is in a lot of the areas that have broadband gaps is how do we get a signal over a mountain, right? So it's one solution. It's certainly cheaper and can hit more points when we install these, but it's not going to address every gap. I mean, you know, if it's $100,000 per mile of laying down wire for hard installations, I mean, that's a significant obstacle to overcome no matter how much money's thrown at it. But point to multi-point is a good way of getting around some of that.
Legislator Heppner, then Archer, then Walter. Yeah.
Thank you, Legislator Gavaris, because you actually brought up, you know, what my point was, is that it's not, you know, this is, you know, I understand this is wireless, but I know Legislator Haynes can speak to this for folks from the town of Hurley. I can speak to it from folks both in West Hurley and in parts of Woodstock, West Saugerties Road, for example, is, you know, we have to think about, you know, home to home, just, you know, general class, you know, general homes that can't even get access in some, you know, in the rural communities that we have in Ulster County, that, you know, wireless might be great, but it's like Legislator Guevara said, I've talked to constituents that have been estimated thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars just to get service for meaningful Wi-Fi. I've been on community meetings where they're literally lined up at the Woodstock Library in their cars using the library's Wi-Fi on their phones just during COVID to tune into a community meeting via Zoom. You know, I think mapping is important, and you know, some communities, yes, have used their franchise fees better than others in terms of infrastructure, but some communities, you know, part of my community is still catching up on cell phone service for most of their district, for most of their town. You know, so we're way behind, and like Legislator Archer said, you know, and it's not just on us, it's on the state and it's on the federal government, but we have to be as strong of advocates for residents to ensure that every home has access to legitimate Wi-Fi. It's 2021, and, you know, it's beyond, you know, the reality that we know it's a, you know, should be considered a public utility, and we need to do better, and we need move faster, but just, you know, these wireless sites could be great for a good number of people, and I hope they are, but, you know, the people I'm talking to on the ground and, you know, the homeowners and people that live in rural, you know, parts of the county, they don't know what to do. They're literally driving to the library, you know, in communities like Woodstock just to access the public meeting, let alone if it's a student trying to, you know, do an assignment, let alone if it's, you know, someone trying to, you know, deal with daily business of their lives. And, you know, so I think we have to be a little bit more aggressive.
Thank you. So the town that initiated the kind of poll by poll assessment was the town of Rochester. This is something we have been working on for years and have been using our cable fees to figure out. We have a lot of mid-mile and last mile issues here just because of the size and the rural aspects of parts of our town. But the mid-mile issues are something that cable companies should have addressed. They created the mid-mile issues where one end of the road got done, the top end of the road got done, and five houses in the middle got left behind because nobody informed them they were expanding service to their area. So we've got huge issues. It's a combination of the cable companies, a combination of the state, the way in which they're mapping. they're too far removed from what's happening with boots on the ground, which was why the legislation was put in place years ago to do a an assessment, a mapping of where we our needs were, where our issues were, so we could do a gap analysis and understand where our problems were. We've been talking about this for over 10 years. We still haven't done a gap analysis, and now we're doing a feasibility study. Technology changes constantly. We are challenged with lack of wireless in a number of parts of our community. So even the wireless with repeaters are only going to address where we have people close together. So I appreciate that wanting to do this, but again, we've talked about this every year for years, and we're no further along. And I think, and this even came up in COVID with people calling into the resource center. You mean to tell me they weren't calling in and saying they don't have access? And particularly now where almost every medical portal is telling you to go to your online and register, outages with Central Hudson, it's telling you to go online. I mean, this is an issue. And we need to understand the full magnitude in our community. And it needs to be escalated and needed to be done immediately. I mean, I can't impress upon any further the limitations it places on people in our community and the hardships that we really saw firsthand with COVID and schooling and people having access. It's, you know, the haves and the have-nots. And, you know, the people that can afford to pay the thousands of dollars to get the connection to their house wired are at an advantage. And once again, the have-nots are disadvantaged because they don't have access to this information. We just don't have a sense of urgency, and there really needs to be one around this.
Let's say Walter, then Bartels, then Kale.
Thanks. I'm sorry. I'm really confused because a year ago when I had asked about why we weren't doing more, I was told, well, there are two towers already that we have. And then we're going to work on building another one. I get the feasibility. I think that I agree with Legislator Archer and others that we should be doing a broader countywide assessment. But in terms of if we know two towers, you told us a year ago, there are two towers we have already that we could use, I believe AT&T towers or something like that. There are two and that you're looking for another one. Why aren't we just putting them on those two towers? It says it here. You identify that there's two existing facilities. It doesn't seem we need a feasibility study when you know that there are two existing facilities. I guess I'm not questioning the need to have a broader understanding, but why haven't we put this already on the two existing towers a year later?
Deputy Secretary Ryder?
I mean, I don't have an answer for that. I'll follow up with the planning department and economic development. I know some of this was going to follow behind with the new tower. We're trying to follow behind the tower with the interoperability. So I don't know why we're not moving it forward on the new towers. I understand that question, and well, I'll follow up.
Yeah. And to Legislator Kale's point, where are they? Because we have two towers we know we're going to use, then we should know their address. So where are the two towers that we, a year ago, knew we could use? Where are they located?
I don't have an answer to that.
Okay. So because we do know, Legislator Cahill can have an answer, at least for where the two towers are, because you've identified a year ago that you knew we had two towers.
No, we have communication towers out there, right, for the interoperability and emergency management. I don't know that they've selected exactly two, but we will follow up with those details.
Debbie Zayrider, when you're following up on that, can you just also, if you can get us any information about how far of a net the one in Elmville is actually servicing and how many users, what's the, you know, how much gigs it's actually sending out? I mean, because honestly, this is the first I've heard this. I didn't even know this existed. Literally in my backyard, and I had no idea about this. So it's pretty interesting. I wonder how many of you actually know about it and are using it. So if we can get some kind of information on it, that would be helpful.
And just clarification on the feasibility plan, what's it entail? What are we talking about specifically? You know, we really need to understand what the plan is. I know I do. And it would be helpful to have that.
All right. Legislator Bartels, then Kayla.
Thanks. Yeah, again, so I just want to reiterate, having had my mind refreshed that it was Rochester, that, you know, this is something I think we should be reaching out to the municipalities and potentially assisting with that kind of granular analysis so that when money does come down, we are prepared to advocate and express our needs countywide as specifically as we are able. And right now, I feel like we do not know what the needs are countywide, not down to that granular level. And it will put us in a much better position, not just as it relates to these funds, but as it relates to these discussions moving forward, if we know what we have to tackle. The other technical question I have is this page, this document that we're looking at, refers to, and it's what Legislator Cahill just spoke about before, 2021 to 2022, $140,000 in a design phase. I'm assuming that we did not spend that, correct? That didn't. So is there a reason we keep it in the book as it's proposed? Why isn't this a living debt? Why don't we remove that?
Without knowing whether they've gotten quotes from purchasing and whether we're ready to start, I'm not sure where planning is on this. So we can follow up with all these
details. Yeah, so just, I mean, even to just follow up for this, because we have, in 2022, we have 100,000, we have zero in the prior years, and yet we're showing from 2021 to 2022, spending 140,000 in design, and then we're showing 100,000. So maybe if we could just, I don't know, make all that, if it's not money that's spent, maybe we can remove it, just make it reflect what we're accurately talking about. And I know that those numbers, the estimates are estimates, so they're never going to be exactly right. We've had that conversation before.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chairman. So a quick question. Has the county considered entering into shared service agreements with the municipalities since they get this franchise fee? And a lot of them just sit on it. They don't do anything with it, or they put it in their budget rather than actually use it for what it was intended, to expand the communication from government to the citizens, right? That's what that money's for. So is that something that we could look at as part of this project, is engaging with some of the towns who don't have as much money, where we could partner with them and help them, you know, improve their broadband access, you know? I don't know. Have you guys discussed that at all? Is it something you would be willing to discuss?
Sure, it's something we'd be willing to discuss.
I mean, could we include it, you know, as part of the discussion for when we start talking about the design and that, and see if you could reach out to the towns through the Association of Towns and see if they'd be interested in participating? I mean, to me, I think that makes sense, because, you know, we could get more bang for our buck. And it wouldn't cost the county 100% of everything. The town has money for these things and might as well use it, right? The same project where everybody benefits.
Further discussion? All right, the only other comment I'll make also on this is that from my time on the town board, I said this over and over again, part of the problem why high-speed internet in Ulster County is so expensive in the town of Warsing is because we allow for these franchise agreements and we allow for a single source vendor to provide service. If you look at our neighboring counties and towns outside of Ulster that don't do franchise agreements, then they do allow for more than one cable company, for example, Comcast and Spectrum, to coexist, or whatever, Verizon Fios and Comcast, where you don't have these monopolies. You also don't have the same costs either. Because they have competition. They're not just take it or leave it. I myself have cut the cord completely. I have no high-speed internet through Time Warner or Spectrum or anybody. I use Verizon Wireless for my house, and it saves a ton of money, but I don't know that the average person is doing that. So I just, you know, as we're looking at this, and to Legislator Cahill's point, you know, some towns have have to, you know, put away their money and stored it, and they've used it to offset their budget. I think as part of a, you know, an application process, Legislative Kayla, I think we would look at, did they use their money towards it and they just don't have enough, or did they use their money and put it into the general fund? In which case, why should we do offset, you know, as much for a town that did what they were supposed to do with the fund? So thank you all. ARP, water and sewer.
This is a new project, obviously. We have the ARP working group on this with legislators Yucatel and Fabiano. I don't know what you guys want to discuss on it. This is intended for water and, well, I see the hands up. So $3.9 million overall for water and sewer projects spread out over the next few years. We're currently working on developing criteria for objectively selecting projects, you know, focusing on economic development, affordable housing, not just water projects for the sake of water projects. But those, we've had one meeting with the ARP committee, and, you know, those discussions are ongoing.
I say, Walter?
So a couple questions. One is this different from the other one that we had, the cap, the community development, because this would just be county water? Like, what differentiates this? Part one of my question is what?
It's the funds. ARP funds are solely being used for this project. Similar.
Okay, the nature of it. What's different?
Correct. Right.
Oh,
the funding source of the ARP, the other funding source would be county funds with municipal participation.
Not. Which means we have to have an interest, or that it has to go to a county purpose. So that's slightly different than the ARP funding as well.
Yeah.
So is this overlapping? I mean, I'm still confused. So if I'm a municipality and I want to do water sewer, do I have the capacity once you have this application process to apply to both of them?
Since we don't have the other process up and going, I won't speak to that. We're working on getting the ARP process up and going. So I would say this would be the first availability of funding for those projects.
And why is it two, though? I guess they're very confused, because
different rule sets for the funds.
And Legislator Walther, that's why we skipped the year in the community development program. It didn't start till 2023.
I see. So this is going, but just to say what it's true, that they're the same thing, right? So I mean, it's different money, but it's the same thing.
Similar process, yes.
Similar.
Similar, right?
Yes.
There may be projects that qualify under ARP funding that wouldn't qualify under our other funding.
Okay, but since you don't know what the qualifications are, you can't say that's even true. It might be exactly the same.
So, well, we know that we have to have a bondable interest, or that has to be a county purpose, which these funds don't require that.
And I'll just have one more point, and I don't mean this in any kind of offense, and this was sort of going on in my mind when the executive's office proposed three positions in order to allow the ARP funding to be expended. And I felt like, well, how can we decide which positions until we know? You know, hearing about the delay in moving on the broadband, hearing that we haven't gotten the sort of description for the water sewer and all this, you know, that hasn't been finalized. It seems to me that the planning department needs more staff. I mean, you know, like, there's a lot of these ARP things and just general priorities that are being put on the planning department. And I feel like it's consistently, I'm hearing they haven't got it done yet. They do plenty. I'm not suggesting they're sitting around doing nothing. I'm suggesting that it seems like they need help, because we should be having the broadband thing taken care of already a year ago. We should have those, that application process for water and sewer. I mean, that just should be done. And if it's not, it tells me that planning needs another person who can prioritize these things. And that's to me more important than a director of innovation, you know, is to have somebody who makes sure that these things are actually happening. So have you put in more money for someone in planning to really move these projects along?
So we put in money for a senior planner in this year's budget, and they're going to be focused on housing. And I think that would help balance resources in the department. But I think that, you know, looking at these other parts, we'll take that into consideration, certainly.
I do want to point out that the reason you're hearing the planning department come up a lot is that the back of the capital improvement plan is planning. Like, these are broken up by departments. You'll hear that Department of Public Works wasn't, like, you'll hear us talk more about highways and bridges and public works when it comes up. We're talking about planning, not being able to accomplish something now, because this is the planning section of the capital improvement program. But to the point, I mean,
if Department of Public Works can't accomplish the things they were supposed to do 2 years ago, I'd say the same thing for that department. The fact is if there were things that we were hoping to accomplish a year, 2 years, or as Legislator Archer said, 10 years ago, it tells me that you don't have enough people to do these jobs. Like that's what that tells me. We approve it. We think it's great. We're all for it. And if it doesn't happen, it means you need people to be doing it.
We're not going to solve the broadband issue with the capital that was just discussed heavily on our own. I mean, it's a nationwide issue. Us not dealing with it over the last 10 years, it's the providers. I hear you, but the $1.4 million that we've put in is a drop in the bucket for broadband. But again, that's why there's federal programs. That's why there's state programs. In the budget, we put 3 American Rescue Plan positions in place to help maneuver all of these projects through. And we believe that, you know, we will be able to accomplish everything in this capital program that's slated for these years with those positions and with other positions we've added, the planning, et cetera. Assuming another pandemic doesn't get in the way or other things.
Yeah, just not for nothing. I just looked it up. The policy was put in place in 2014. We've been having these conversations about at least mapping out what our current state of broadband accessibility is within this county, so that we at least have a full understanding of where the gaps are, what the concerns are. We understand it. And you know what? It's been ignored. This is, you know, I'm frustrated. I know you guys are all frustrated, but this is, and COVID has exacerbated the problem. It has identified that it is of concern. And, you know, to Legislator Walter's point, maybe we aren't putting the resources in the right places to get the things done that are really important to the people in the community. So maybe that's something we should take a look at.
Ashley Workhouse.
Thank you. So I have a question about this. So, and I guess we don't have to spend a ton of time because I can talk to the members of the special committee, but I'm wondering, based on the amount of money that we're directing or proposing to direct toward this in each year, are we expecting that the bulk of these funds are going to match studies for water and sewer rather than actual water and sewer projects? Is that fair?
No, we're looking for things that are ready to move that will incentivize building in terms of affordable housing, economic development. It's really to be put to use, shovel ready.
And so those kinds of projects could cost, you know, I mean, we're proposing to put what percentage of the project? Because it says that they will not pay more than 75, right? So.
Yeah, I mean, we know that the municipalities also receive funds. You know, we're going to be matching up with municipalities as well as probably existing water and sewer districts, which have their own authority to levy fees. So they're going to have a financing source on their own. So we're looking to assist to stimulate the projects that make sense, that have the broadest kind of impact. but not own the whole thing. It's more of that partnership rather than us coming in for the whole thing. Water can be expensive.
That's why I'm asking. I mean, for such a for 2.5 million, we think that's actually going to stimulate real.
I think it's certainly going to help certain. I think it's certainly going to help certain projects move quickly. Yes.
And do we have a sense of how many projects are at the stage of teetering on moving quickly?
Regular discussions with the towns and mayors, the supervisors association. I mean, there are a handful of known projects, but we haven't done the formal call. We haven't set the application. So I don't want to be too presumptuous in terms of what's out there and what's more ready to go than not. I think when we put the call for projects out there, what our criteria will do is get these municipalities centered around how they want to apply, are they ready, how far along they are in their projects to begin with.
Yeah, I mean, I guess for me, it's almost a which comes first. Like, I would love to have a sense of what's out there and a sense of the need before we put a call out, which on some level, it doesn't legally commit us, but it sort of commits us to investing. I'd like to have a sense of how much is out there that's waiting to go on this kind of stimulus. And so that's just food for thought more than for anything else right now, because again, I know that you're working on it in the individual group, but that's my feeling. I'd love to get a sense of what's out there, because everything I've heard is anecdotal.
I say, Walter.
Thanks. Tracy, disagree with Legislator Bartels. I just find myself literally, if I go to my town and village, which I go to every month, and I say, hey, there's going to be two sources of money to help your water and sewer. And they're going to say, that's amazing. What do I have to do? And I'm going to have to say, I don't know. And they're going to say, well, when will we know? And I'm going to have to say, I don't know. And so I'm going to actually request the opposite, that by January, you commit to having an RFP for the municipalities so that they can say what they need. Then you can figure out what you could do and whether it's enough money or not. But, I just picture either I don't tell my municipalities this exists, these two capital projects, or I tell them and I'm prepared to have actual answers for them. And, this isn't the first time there was sort of money put aside for municipalities and there would be some RFP process that the RFP process never even came to be. So I'm begging you, for at least this one, have a plan by the end of December so that the municipalities can just start actually applying and using this money, because I know for mine, they're desperate to improve their water sewer. And this is a part of housing, affordable housing, economic development, all of those things. And so right. I don't want to wait. I want to let them tell you that they need it. And then you can figure out, how to help. And since there's two sources, I feel like you'll probably be able to cover quite a lot of bases.
So to that point, we are probably about 30 days away from having the full ARP team in place, which is certainly going to help us facilitate this process. I'm not going to say January 1, but I can say that between this one and the non-for-profit, which I'll meet with that group on Friday, we want to get those application processes going in a similar kind of cadence. So those are top priority in terms of getting going and getting the call for projects out there.
Just to clarify, the ARP process is also a legislative process. These task forces are...
Right, so we're meeting with each group in order to... So, to my next meeting with legislators Fabiano and Yucatel will also speak to that part of the process.
Say, Hefner.
Thank you. Actually, Eve said it perfectly. I totally agree with her. Deputy Executive Ryder, you and I have spent how many hours on phone calls with the town of Hurley, same with Legislator Haynes at times, regarding, these municipalities need to know what options they have for the ability to them to then plan. and move forward, which we think is the best process as a regulator per state regulations, to, you know, a system take over private water systems that have not been providing the structure and the water that these communities deserve. So that's all I wanted to say, and totally agree with Legislator Walter on the timeline, and that, you know, this needs to be aware to the towns, and they need to have the ability to prepare for it and plan for it. So thank you.
Legislator Cahill.
Thank you. So I see that it says that you're going to be based on, in quotes, shovel ready, I guess, shovel ready ability. Has the county reached out to municipalities to get a list of what they deem are shovel ready projects that this can be applied to? Because to me, it would seem that if you had that list to start with, that would just make the process go that much quicker. You wouldn't have to, you know, vet all the projects yourselves, let the towns do that, say these are the projects that we feel are shovel ready, and that would just expedite this whole process much, much quicker and allow for the county to be much more selective in how they do it based on shovel ready projects, which is part of what the criteria we're going to be doing. And I'm assuming these are going to be done in the form of a grant application, and the grants will be graded. Is that a fair assessment?
Right, which I guess to the first point you made, that's only one of the criteria that we're going to have to objectively score these on. This is a limited pot of money, and there's going to be competition for the funds. So I think we need to be very thorough in how we set that criteria for the municipalities. We need to define clearly what shovel ready means to us and the timeline we expect the projects to be completed on. Where they are in the design or engineering process of these projects is important. We saw a call for projects. Dennis Doyle did solicit from the municipalities a list of projects. I can tell you by looking at that list, some are the back of the napkin type of projects that they wish they could have if they had $10 million. I'm being facetious, but that's what they were. There are other projects that have been in design and they are ready to go, and they just need that extra kind of portion, gap filler in the project to make it a reality. So I wish it was going to be as easy as just saying, send us your projects and we'll send you checks. But I think it's going to be certainly a bit more challenging than that when there's the competition for finite resources here.
Legislator Archer, I think you had your hand up.
Yeah, the one thing that I have to say gives me great pause for the communities that are going to leverage this, it's going to be once again the haves and the have-nots. The communities that already have projects already in the works, they're going to be put to the top of the list in criteria selection, et cetera. And yet we're not looking holistically across the county of where the opportunities for growth, for economic growth, et cetera, could occur. And in conjunction with the supervisor, I'm not saying you do it in isolation, but I do believe that what it does do is that those communities that can afford or are looking because of density issues or other issues, and putting in sewer and water, great, fine. Are they the communities that are driving our local economies? Are they critical to an overall plan? We kind of are hit or miss out there versus having a really smart strategic plan that says, here's where we're going to invest. These are the reasons why. Is this something a community is interested in or not? I feel it. This gives me pause of just spreading money to spread money without really a good strategic plan about where we want to invest and why, because it makes sense for the overall county, because this is county dollars. So
to that point, we actually have a housing action plan. We have Ulster 2040. So we've done several countywide analysis of where there's need. We also regularly speak with the mayors and supervisors associations about what they're experiencing in their communities. So I would say that we're not at the end yet. We haven't created the application or selected the project, so I wouldn't want to say that we're not hitting those needs.
But when you say to me, and I appreciate that, I really do, but when you say to me that it's going to be those that are in the works and are looking for that, you know, little extra cash to make the project come, does that align with our overall 2040 strategy? Does it align with, you know, where we think we can create some economic opportunity?
It aligns with the rule set with ARP funds that have to be expended by December 31st, or the amounts have to be encumbered by December 31st, 2024. So expediency of the projects is a criteria that we're kind of constrained by.
Legislator Hefner, then Litz.
Yeah, I would just say, you know, I understand that, you know, there's plenty of places in the county. Look at the Route 28 corridor in terms of water infrastructure and all that. And what I'm talking about in the town of Hurley, in West Hurley, is right off of that. But again, clean drinking water shouldn't be based on economic development. Clean drinking water should be a right to every individual. And if a town has the ability to do that and guarantee that right, I'm going to support that all day. And earlier to Legislator Walter's point, I think this fund should be higher, in my opinion. And sorry, Legislator Walter, if I misunderstood you, but I believe this fund should be higher because I believe that clean drinking water is, again, just like Wi-Fi that we were just talking about, is a right. And, you know, I respectfully disagree that it should be based on economic development. Yes, there's plenty of places throughout the county where we don't have sewer water that we should have, but let's start somewhere. And let's make it, again, something that our residents deserve, not based on their economic output. Thank you.
Let's then Bartels.
Well, I mean, I just wanted to say, I mean, it's not like this is coming out of nowhere. We have a 2040 plan. Most, if not all, towns have a comprehensive plan. So it's not like we're starting from scratch and we don't know where we're going. Most towns know where they're going, know what they're doing. And the biggest stumbling block is funding. So if this funding can jumpstart some of these projects that the town know they need, and it's part of their comprehensive plan, and the county planning board reviews all of those plans and judges them against the comprehensive plan for the town, I don't think we're shooting in the dark. I think we know where we're going.
Thank you. I think for me, what I'm trying to understand and what my question's about, the understanding the finances and where the projects are, you know, what our contribution means to the projects earlier has to do with the fact that from my perspective, and I know I'm speaking as one legislator, we have $34 million in ARPA funds that we're trying to allocate, and we're making difficult decisions on where we think we're going to have the most impact with those funds. And if we're going to spend, say here, $2.5 million on water and sewer and infrastructure, and in each case, let's say it's $500,000 to one town. If that's the difference to getting the project started, it begs the question in me of why a town wouldn't bond that $500,000. It's you know, and what that $2.5 million could mean in a countywide sustainable program. And I just am going through the personal mental exercise of trying to ask those difficult questions of myself and to understand how many projects this is going to fund and what percentage of those projects it's going to fund and whether or not it's the make or break for those projects and whether or not those towns can bond that money and whether or not it's funding a study versus, as Chris said, a shovel-ready project. And how long that shovel ready project's been sitting and how much the town is putting in. So I realize it's a lot of questions and I'm not asking for any of those answers right now, but that's the metric I'm going through, not whether or not every one of the projects is a worthwhile project, because I'm sure countywide, you know, not only as it spurs economic development, but everyone's right to clean water, as both Legislator Archer and Legislator Hefner said, both of those are critically important. I get it, but I just want to understand what our impact is on the individual projects.
I just want to quickly call your attention to the fact that the Environmental Facilities Corporation creates an intended use plan every year or every other year for drinking water and clean water. And there are projects on there on those lists from Ulster County, and that the committee that puts together the criteria might want to look at those criteria that they already use and might want to piggyback, because EFC obviously could be a secondary source of funding. I threw those lists in the chat. Thanks. Bye.
Next one, community support, nonprofits.
So this is part of our ARP working group, where we'll be setting up a grant program to assist our non-for-profit youth arts groups with throughout the county. They'll be eligible to apply for grants from the county to assist them with, you know, programming associated with recovering from COVID-19 pandemic effects, capital expenses. We're looking at, so Dutchess County, their community development department within planning has an application. So we're reviewing that and how they've structured it over the years. They have a bit more experience there. The ARP group has met once already. We'll meet again on Friday, where we're going to begin to drill down a bit further. I'd say similar to the infrastructure part, we're looking that, you know, by January 1 on or about in that area, we're hoping to get ready for a call for projects on that. But more discussions to be had with that specific ARP group as well.
I say, Walter.
Thanks. So I recognize your group has more to talk about on this. I'll just tell you three of my questions or concerns. One is, we already have two mechanisms, at least that I know of. The Youth Board provides funding, and then there's legislative programs. So I would hope that you, with your group, have this clarity of how we are not duplicating, like how did those entities go work together? You know, we give a chunk of money to Youth Board, they distribute it, Legislative Programs does it, you're going to have this third pool, and it's many of the same programs. And so how did those three work together, and is it efficient to even have three different mechanisms? So that's the first one. And then the second one that concerns me is, well, I guess that's one and two. The third is how this is going to be package that, you know, I recognize that ARP is sort of a kind of a one and done thing. This isn't going to be continued programming funding. And many of these programs, I mean, especially like the things, those are funded through the Youth Board, they're typically, and legislative programs, several of them, they kind of come to rely on this funding. And so and I know you won't have the answer now, but how will you express that nature of this, that this is money now, and then it could end, whether you're eligible if you apply in the first year to apply the second year and the third year? You know, I can picture a scenario where, you know, whatever, let's say you end up funding 30 programs in the first year. Then the second year you cut in half. So that means you telling then 15 of those programs they're out of luck, and then you keep cutting it down. So you're, if the same programs are expecting funding each year, then they're going to have to be dropped off more and more, whether if that makes sense, or whether it makes sense just to do one chunk in one year to do a, like a boost, and where they understand it's just that one year and it won't happen again. But, you know, again, I just see so many possible pitfalls in how this is going to happen that I hope you kind of process all of those kinds of things in your group. And that
sure. So we're going to be, I mean, to the one major point, we have to be explicit in our call for projects that this is not sustaining funding, that this is really for, it's going to be a one-time source of funding. So I think that just, our communications have to be clear on that point of it.
So then why not just do it all in one chunk? So that
that's what we have to discuss with the ARP working group is how we're going to approach this. So that's for Friday. I think that's certainly part of the discussion. I'm not there yet.
Okay. And then, yes, yeah, so if you can just get back eventually on how that, or maybe yeah. whoever's on that group, on how that connects with legislative programs and,
To that end, on legislative programs, I do not believe there is a formal process or application. We intend on using a formal application for funds and then vetting them with specific criteria.
Yeah, I'm saying, but the same people are potentially going to both sources, and that there should be some kind of communication between the two, because it would be the same organization.
Legislative staff is on the ARP meetings with us. So, we're certainly communicating on that part of it. So we'll make sure that we delineate between the two programs.
So let's move on to let's.
No, I was just going to say, other counties have done this, and this is American Rescue Plan money. This is a one-shot deal, so I hope that no one has the inclination that they're going to get this every year. This is money that's I've never seen anything like this before, where we get money from the federal government. But anyway. And the other is going to be vetted out. I'm sure we're going to have an application process. And one of the questions on there, are you eligible for funding from any other program? So all of those things will flesh out with the application program.
And as Amber just pointed out to send me a text, that we do have a formal process.
I was not aware that there was an application that's active for legislative programs.
And that's, we changed that last year. Amber, if you want to jump in at all, feel free. If not.
So there is a formal process. We do have a policy. It was amended this year. There is an application that is in draft form. And there's also a matrix that's in draft form, both of which have been communicated. And those drafts are currently in this committee for review and discussion. And so there was a memorandum passed out, I want to say like a month ago, that said those discussions will be continued at the budgetary appeals meetings.
Legislator Haynes.
And I just want to note that, although currently I'm not quite sure, I haven't read the draft, the changes to legislative programs recently. However, in the past, there was a mechanism in place that they would need to have some form of self-funding in order to receive monies from the county. So I think that's something we should keep in mind that would help alleviate the issue that Legislator Walters brought up.
Thank you. All right. Housing Smart Communities. Before we go into this, let's just keep in mind that at the current pace, we have another 17 and a half hours to go. Just want to put it into perspective for you. We've only gotten through 7 of these in an hour and 20 minutes. So let's try to be more concise if we can. All right, Housing Smart Communities.
This is a new project based on one of the key recommendations of our Housing Action Plan. We reviewed this today with Legislator Bartels and Legislator Ronk and Chairman. As part of the ARP committee, so this is our kickoff meeting. This money is going to be used to help our municipalities implement or do studies on their own. We would hire a countywide consultant and look at different parts of zoning that supports affordable housing, or term sheets, or looking at the short-term rental issues by municipality, but this is really to help implement that part of the Housing Action Plan. So,
okay. Any questions? Yeah. All right, on to jail demolition.
This project was also discussed today at the Housing ARP Committee with Legislators Bartels and Ronk and the Chairman. This is to use $1.5 million to speed along the demolition of the old jail on Golden Hill so we can get moving on that affordable housing project there.
questions? The green home retrofit and workforce development.
So we had one meeting on this with legislators Green and Bruno as part of the ARP committee. So this program, we will be looking to work with agencies such as RUPCO, who has similar programs through CDBG funds, I believe, where we would be doing home energy retrofits on low and moderate income houses. And this is a significant part of the Green New Deal. It also feeds into workforce development, where we'd be potentially training workforce members to do this type of work, which is going to be something that we think long term is going to be a pretty good industry. So that's that one.
I haven't had a chance yet to talk to with the, you know, in the caucus or with the members who sit on this. In terms of the workforce training, that makes sense to me. As far as the energy retrofits, my main question is, how backlogged is the line for this through NYSERDA and other providers? Because my understanding, you know, I these programs readily exist, and my understanding is, you know, if you fit the income eligibility, you can pretty readily get your house retrofitted. So I'm not sure why we're undertaking what seems to me on the face, on the, just at least in this little detail, as a duplication of services, unless someone can say that, okay, there's a line of X amount of people who are waiting and the program's full and we're filling that need. But that's not my understanding of the project as it stands currently.
I'll get back to you. I'll talk to Dennis.
Okay.
On that one.
And I can talk to you offline, because I know people have benefited from this program directly. And so I know a little bit about how quickly it happened for them through other existing programs.
And I know RUPCO is actively engaged on this one. So I know that, you know, we have some local resources. So,
yeah.
Okay. I'll get back
Thank
to
you.
Yep.
Price list.
So we've discussed Enterprise West in the past. We've recently put forward a project that was, I think it was pared down to about 170,000 more on the legal, the assessment, and the surveys. So this is part of that larger discussion on Enterprise West. We do think it's important that we signal to the community and to the business community that we want to use ARP funds to build a more resilient economy. So I know this is an ongoing discussion between us and the legislature.
Any questions? Director, you to business.
So this program is looking to build off of the award that we received, the $1 million, I believe, of CDBG funds for direct aid to business. So we're going to go out. I know economic development is working on that one. This looks to build upon that, and do part of it is to look at even smaller businesses that don't have the ability to apply, looking at minority and women-owned and veteran-owned businesses, and really trying to help those ones and twos, those sole proprietors, recover and be a bit more resilient coming out of the pandemic.
I say, Walter.
Thanks. Sorry. So can you just say again before I ask my question? So round one will be for whom?
So right now, there's specific criteria that I'm not fully aware of that we were just executed a contract on. I think it was CDBG funding for a similar program. So I'm not sure on that. We are looking to do our round two is more about minority and women-owned businesses, veterans. So I defer to Tim on the other subset.
CDBG funds was, I think it was about 25 businesses at 35,000 each, or 35 businesses at 25,000 each.
Okay.
And that was the one where we did get the request from about 140 businesses. So essentially, this is a plan to use ARP funds to extend that and make it available to a broader subset of businesses, including MWBEs, veteran-owned businesses, smaller businesses.
So can I ask, I mean, I don't know if this is just language. I get the concept that you're saying expand eligibility, but obviously some in round one might be minority women-owned businesses, veteran-owned businesses, and economic fit. So it's not like they're not included in round one and you're expanding it in round two. I feel like the language of this is a little off and not clear. Like, is round two prioritizing those groups over any others? As opposed to, you know, just saying we're expanding it, like, okay, more people can apply is very different than saying we're going to prioritize on the top of the list if they are minority, women, veteran, or economic advantage. And then if they're not in those categories, they're dropping to the bottom.
You're 100% correct. It's
okay, prioritized. So it doesn't read that way. It kind of.
I know. I see that. We can correct that. Yep.
You could just say prioritizing. Round two will prioritize those groups instead.
So again, I mean, this is similar to my concerns about, and I'm just going to put it on the table, but, and I know that the place really to discuss it is with the rest of the legislature and with the reps who sit on this group. But, you know, I'm very interested in how this intersects. I get that 140 businesses applied, but I'm really interested in how this intersects with the loans and programs that currently exist. You know, through the SBA, there's the Paycheck Protection Program, the EIDL program, there's the Restaurant Revitalization Program, which essentially can fund all lost revenue in a forgivable grant. There's cross-program eligibility. There's so much out there, and I'm wondering if our businesses are aware of all that. And certainly, any business, and my family runs a business, any business would welcome a $35,000 grant on top of those other grants. But I'm wondering, again, I think of this $1 million against what else this $1 million might do. And just me personally, I'm particularly interested in the mental health possibility of programs and opioid. Helping with opioid addictions and overdoses and all these other things that we can do as a county where we are the last resort. And so I really want to understand how this money is different than all the money that's out there that we maybe can just help our businesses access if they're not already accessing it.
Any of those other programs, if I may, and many of the other programs are part of the general menu that economic development or Department of Economic Development deals with on a daily basis. Also, many of them have ultimately not been successful hits for a lot of the businesses that have been struggling. I know plenty have been turned down for the PPP loans, the Workforce Reduction Act loans. So. I think the intent, and ultimately, again, this is going to be a function of the working group to determine how these funds can be earmarked and how it can spin off the CDBG kind of model, which is a direct grant to business, regardless of their loss of employees or loss of revenue. It can help them recover from the pandemic, and that can be the basis for this. But again, it's for the working group to determine.
You're welcome.
Thanks. I think Legislative Bartels brings up a really good point, which had me remember something else, which is this idea of what we are going to do. And this was something, at least in the Democratic caucus, that we had explored as priority areas of new businesses, and especially minority-owned new businesses, and what we are doing, especially to assure that the different main streets that we have across our county have businesses that represent the diversity of the populations that live there. And I was really hoping we would have some business development money for not just existing businesses who might have other sources of support, but really to encourage these new businesses. So I hope that that will be brought into consideration as well.
Any other discussion? I'll just add, you know, just looking back and to those who remember the Elmo Millions, I think we just need to be careful in when we choose recipients, make sure that it's a sustainable business and we're not just giving money to an enterprise or a business that this is going to get them maybe another month or two, but in the end, they're going to go under and there goes the money as well. So just that was a lesson I think learned, hopefully learned from the Elmo Millions. Brownsfield redevelopment.
So this project is also part of the Economic Development ARP committee. This money will be used to assess different foreclosed properties that are on our rolls now. I believe there are how many at the moment? 30 something.
Yeah.
About 36 properties. Yeah. So we'd look to make an assessment on as many as we can to see the potential for reuse, what it takes to rehabilitate. So that's this part of the program.
The rail trail.
New project. It's building, constructing a trail between High Mountain and Big Indian.
I think last month in your session, you did approve a resolution to go to request a grant from the state. It's all together for the 2.5 miles of the first phase, which is mostly from High Mount to the Bel Air Deus, the beach kind of area. It attaches to all the cross-country ski trails at Bel Air. It's a high priority trail on DEC. It would be the same 10-foot wide compact gravel that the ART is. It has an S-turn in it that's pretty well known. You go right in front of Bel Air from High Mount to the Deus area, 2.5 miles for the first phase. And that was in a resolution 2 weeks ago here for that grant funding. So that process has started on this one.
So that's why there's the separation, that there's two phases, right, John? Yeah. That's why there's a separation in 23 and then again in 25.
I think the second phase will get all the way down to Big Indian, which is a little bit further.
Correct.
Green management plan.
I actually don't. I don't know if Chris or John, you have information on this one other than what's on here.
Green infrastructure, no.
It's a totally funded project with DP and DC. There's no county share.
Open space and recreation.
This is not a new project. We have spent some money in this, but it's just an ongoing project for open space recreation.
Thanks, Realtor. Legislator Archer.
Yeah. Mark, do you know how much we've spent and on what? I see 129. Is that what we spent to date?
Yes.
Okay.
And I would have to get back to you on, I think it's acquisition, but I'll get back to you on that.
That's what I was wondering if this was. Okay. Thanks.
Thanks, Realtor.
This is a trail that would be parallel to where the tracks are. It's not on that easement. It's right next to that easement of the tracks from Washington Avenue down to that trail in Hurley, which goes along 209.
This has been held up because of the affordable housing project, but everything is moving. We're working with Central Hudson. We anticipate building this out in 22.
Show cam rail trail.
This is fixing some structures. It's just an ongoing kind of maintenance of
annual inspection.
Culverts and
infrastructure and trails.
So this project is part of the ARP Infrastructure and Trails Committee. This is for three gaps that would be covered with OSI, and they proposed plans for that, as well as a smaller pot of money to help municipalities improve some of their sites that may have been used extensively during the pandemic. I think we all saw that there was a much higher usage of recreational sites, and that's a call for use in the ARP funding.
Are we requiring any shared services with the towns for these trails?
I mean, I can get more Hershey cores. I want to get that big.
There are some.
Sorry, go for it.
There are some, like, shared services agreement, like, for the Midtown Linear Park, the city of Kingston is responsible for maintenance. Some of the other trails have the municipalities as responsible, but, like, they also have the Walk Hill Valley Land Trust or whatever it is who maintains it as well.
I was more thinking of, like, the trail, for example, on you've got the from Ellenville to the correctional facility. Is there any thought to having the towns commit to whatever amount of man hours with the highway department to help with this?
Potentially. Some already do, Chairman. The for example, I'm not sure about the one in Ellenville, but I know the Walk Hill Walden Trail is owned by the towns. They do a lot of the maintenance. That's one of the gaps that OSI wants to fill as well, which would go past the prisons up to Gardner and then further up. But there, it's kind of a litany of who has ownership, who has responsibilities that are shared between some by the county, some by some municipalities, some by some of these trail organizations. So it is kind of a litany of
oversight. I just think, you know, just in staying consistent, we were talking about the water and sewer before, and having the townships be, you know, partners in this, I think this should also be one of those things where they are partners in this, and it's not just us giving them money for something.
Yeah, no, I agree. That's absolutely a good way to look at this. But, so, and I'm sure some of it will be probably as a money source.
For the three specific projects, I also think OSI would also help maintain those trails.
Yeah, I'm more sure of talking about the actual development of the trails. Afterwards, I understand the towns, but, you know, if it requires heavy equipment to be used, then the town highways have that. They should be putting in X number of hours into the project. Okay, food and security access.
So this project, we'll be meeting tomorrow with the ARP group. That's our first meeting, and we'll have Amanda Lavelle taking point on this. But this is really a coordinating position that we'd look to at probably Cornell Cooperative, since they have the most experience and are interested in doing the work. But it would be about analyzing and facilitating the local and regional food coalitions to address the issues with food access and security. I'd be happy to make Amanda available if there are further questions. I confess I'm not an expert on this one.
So I have a thought. I wish Legislator Walter was here. You know, I'll come back to this. I'd like Legislator Walter to be here for my discussion on this. So I'll come back to it. Zena Road.
So this is a tip replacement project of the bridge, and it's a 4-pin steel bridge. And just as a caveat for all of our bridges, just want to let you guys know there are supply chain concerns regarding steel, and we have been told there's a 9-month delay in steel ordering. So we are working off of our best estimate in terms of time frames. But this is TIP funded, federally funded.
Is this currently a bridge that's operational or it's been shut down?
Brendan, this one's currently operational, correct?
Correct. This bridge is open.
Okay. So it's not red flagged yet.
No red flags for this, no.
Okay. Well, then I guess to the point of the availability of materials and hunter steel is definitely a problem. I would caution us to not, just because we have the money, not pay premiums if we don't really have to at this point.
One of the things we are looking at is coming to you earlier instead of waiting until January, February, and getting these, you know, the steel ordered. So
yep.
We may be to you in December.
UCAT facility?
Everyone somewhat familiar or question?
Legislator Fabiano? You're on mute.
Dean, you're on
mute. Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Yeah. I'm going to have to be excused at 6 o'clock.
Okay. Legislator Bartels?
Yeah, and I can, just on this facility, if someone could just give a brief update. I'm just curious. I mean, one, I get that we're changing to electric, which is very exciting, but it is kind of wild to see a building, out of basically 16 years out of construction be out of date. But what I'm wondering is what's going to happen? What's the current facility going to be used for?
So just from previous experience at UCAT, I'll tell you that prior to the facility being built, there was a 50% increase in usage at the facility. So buses were already being stored outdoors prior to us taking city bus. So the need for an additional facility to store buses so they're not sitting outdoors all winter, and that causes maintenance costs to go up. That's the general gist behind this. It's not so much that the facility is out of date, it's just that we've took on additional runs and we require more space to maintain it.
So what's being proposed is basically an add-on, excuse my bad terminology potentially, but an add-on garage?
Well, potentially. Planning is looking at that, and I'm sure that'll be part of the ultimate design contract. We're looking at a few various sites. They did look at the idea of adding on to the current site, which is an extraordinary sum just for the backfill, necessary because there's a kind of a cliff right next to it or a steep hill, and it just wasn't feasible financially. So I know Dennis and planning, they're trying to ascertain a few other sites, try to figure out what the best potential few sites could be ultimately as we head towards contracts to ascertain the best.
This is an expansion, Legislative Bartels.
Okay.
This is not replacing existing. This is an expansion.
All right. Well, okay, because it does say that it's outgrown its current facility in the description. You might want to reword that. But one, can I just ask one last question? You know, in terms of the increased maintenance costs for leaving buses outside, and notwithstanding the electric question as that relates to inside or outside, but has anyone run the numbers on a $13 million building against those increased maintenance costs?
A comparison of the
meaning how much extra do we spend in maintenance a year versus is it worth a $13 million investment for a new garage?
I'll say it's not just the maintenance cost, it's also they're just flat out running out of space to store buses over there too. That's the bigger issue in hand. The maintenance does play a part of the equations, but it's just there's only so much room to store buses on its current site. I mean, when you go there, if you go after hours, you'll see buses lined up on the rails outside and behind big doors that require them to be plugged in during the winter just so they're turning over in the morning.
Okay, but I mean, that could be solved by that could be solved by a parking lot versus a $13 million building. I guess what I'm saying is what's the cost implication of the outdoor storage of buses on a year over year basis against a $13 million capital improvement, which sounds like we're building a facility so that buses can be inside overnight.
When they're not used.
When they're not used, right.
For a little context, each bus is the better part of $1 million.
Yeah.
They do have a specific lifespan typically. Any shortening of the lifespan obviously pushes a close to $1 million purchase up for any one bus. So I mean, there is a cost for that.
also just staffing and maintenance and repair work that has to be done that can't be done outside in the winter. And just the size of our fleet, which is still growing. And well, both inside and outside, there isn't enough space in the spot that we have now.
That's it, Archer, then Walter.
So if we weren't going to get the ARP money, what would you have done?
This was in the plans before the ARP funding.
This isn't using ARP funds.
This is not? Okay.
No.
This is all county?
Oh, yeah. No, it's
county, federal. State, and federal.
Yeah.
I got it.
Let's say Walter.
Thanks. I'm sorry if it was said while I was walking my puppies. Presumably, in a very short amount of time, we'll have a fully green fleet. Is this being designed to support a 100% green fleet?
Right now, the plan for the county, there is a kind of a 10-year plan that we're following. Hopefully, within 10 years or just on the outside of 10 years, we'll be 100% fully electrified. There's obviously more than just purchasing the buses. There's a lot of infrastructure en route that needs to be installed. There is technology advances that still have to take place. Frankly, there's some cost factors that we're currently working with the state legislature to try to address in terms of surge pricing on electricity. When you charge buses, for example, our electric costs skyrocket. And it costs well over fossil fuel just to charge a bus versus, you know, fast charge versus a slow charge. Which is, they are trying to fix that through legislation now. So it is a 10-year process. It's been laid out. A study's been done. Creighton Manning did the outline of this plan. I think we're going to try to do some accelerating, at least on the front end, of buying more electric buses first. Their plan initially was 3 buses that were electric. Next 3 would be diesel or hybrids. And I mean, to be frank, even the hybrids that were purchased 3 years ago are less efficient on fossil fuel uses than the newest diesels. Obviously part of the plan is the en route infrastructure for charging.
So, all right. I'm going to ask the question in maybe different words, especially because we do have a plan to fast track the expectation for a full green fleet beyond what's existing in the legislature. And that's, you know, discussion with Evelyn. And buildings last a long time, more than 10 years. So knowing that in the lifespan of this building, we will have a whole green fleet, is this building being designed to compensate for an entire green fleet? And I would assume this building has all solar, because that would be a logical thing to do to help support the electrical costs of a green fleet. But you should have every assumption that before this building crumbles, every bus that's in it will be an electric vehicle, and that we should plan now for the building that holds the 100% green fleet, because it will be what it is.
To be clear, the building has not yet been designed. It will be ultimately part of the design process to ensure that it's future-proof. And I think the commitment of this administration towards greening the fleet and the, you know, climate smart county is pretty solid. So yes, I think all that will be addressed through the design process and as we move forward.
And is it solar? Are you planning on solarizing the whole?
It has not been designed. So ultimately, part of the design process will be to look for the most efficient and best green infrastructure construction that we can possibly come up with.
Is it Bart House?
Yeah, and just, I'm sure you're aware, but former legislator Parity definitely knows we have legislation on the books that requires any new construction be built to a LEED standard.
Thank you.
We
see you, Rob.
Let's say, Walter, while you were out, that we were over, went over food insecurity and access. I wanted to wait till you to come back to just quickly bring something up on that. Yeah, that in front of you.
I'll get back to you.
Okay. Well, I'll just make a comment about it. So this is apparently a planning position to help coordinate things. You know, I've been hearing a lot today and over the last couple months of a lot of positions that are doing coordination and I will use the word help desk type of work. You know, maybe we really need to start looking at a central department that focuses on steering people into the services or resources that they're looking for instead of things living in multiple departments with vague descriptions as to what they're going to do. Maybe the answer really is that things are centralized, and if somebody is looking, there's like a help desk, a helpline, you're looking for help with a business, you call this number, you'll be directed to the right person. If you're looking for housing help, you'll be directed to the right person. I just feel like we're going to have people doing overlapping responsibilities with no overarching coordination. So,
Chairman, if I may, this is a contract for services. This is not a position within the county.
Well, it's still a service, right?
Yes.
Still a function. So the function that's going to exist, my point is, if we're going to have all of these various functions.
So we propose that within the budget, with the customer service navigator program, which is basically a redesign of the recovery service center, mm-hmm. which is doing exactly what you're discussing.
Okay.
So that would be housed within information services.
Yeah. Chairman, I just wanted to say, I was just going to say what Chris just said. That came up in our last committee meeting. They presented that as part of their budget presentation where they're going to actually have what you described, the help desk, right? That will steer customers, as they're going to refer to them, both employees and public, to the correct places on the phone.
Yeah.
It sounds like a really good program, actually.
Walker.
Yeah, I mean, for me, food security rises above almost everything, obviously. And I'm not sure if there are other initiatives that are going to go along with this. But, you know, one of the things that we talked about and felt strongly about in our caucus was really establishing a farm to table between the farms and the schools, which would not only respond to some food insecurity, and food insecurity is not just access to food, it's access to healthy food, and be supportive for our farmers. And, you know, in efforts to kind of speaking to what other legislators have mentioned, you know, the challenges that have been in implementing a really robust farm to table with the schools is coordination and organization, because the farms exist, the schools exist. They have different kitchens, they have different processes. So it's, you know, 350,000 is so little to me for food insecurity. And, you know, what I'm wondering is, are there going to be other initiatives to really up that game?
I'll defer to Amanda on this one. She's more of the expert, and we're meeting with the ARP group tomorrow for the first time with legislators Criswell and Lopez. But I'll certainly bring this up. And I think it's a valid point to discuss, certainly.
Deputy Chair Craig?
This is, again, just one contract for services with Cornell Cooperative, who is an expert in the farm, the ag, and in this field. I will say, to your point, Legislator Walter, there is a program that was just announced, I think it was last week, through the governor's office dealing with SNAP, and doing two things. It's connecting farms and farmers markets to allow, I believe, SNAP benefits and other state assistance programs. And it's also connecting local restaurants and allowing people to use those supplemental assistance programs for healthy food in the restaurants and farmers markets. So the state level is dealing with some of this. And we will continue to look at where we can supplement
that program as well for food.
I mean, not to put all my eggs in one basket, get it, but Cornell is also outstanding resource for farm to table as well. And this is stuff they know, and I've talked to them about it. And so this is another something they could easily take on and be successful with.
Electric bus charging stations.
On route infrastructure for the electric buses.
Yeah. UCAP bus replacement.
Content.
This is a recurring project.
Go ahead. Okay. Maintenance facility equipment.
Sorry. Yeah, I'm sorry, Legislator Guevaras. I have just a quick. So, again, since we are definitely, you know, 2027's 5 years away, going to want to speed up that electric fleet. Do you have a breakdown of the different price for the diesel buses versus the electric? And does this pricing consider a consistent growth in replacing with electric vehicles?
Frankly, it's an industry and a technology that's rapidly advancing. At the same time, there is some frustrating oversight issues. There is, for example, right now, one electric bus in the 35 to 40 foot length, which is the standard size bus, the bigger bus that we're allowed to get under the federal grant program, which is called the New Flyer. We would prefer the Gillum bus. Our first three are going to be New Flyers, and potentially the next few will be New Flyer buses. But those are New Flyer is the only one that's permitted. And they're close to $1 million each. They're significantly more expensive than diesel. What was it? $480 for diesel.
Yeah.
It's so twice the price. Yeah. But that's, yeah.
Right. So can I just, again, ask the question in a different way? It's just, is it possible to see a breakdown for those years ultimately on how you're fitting the electric vehicles into those prices? You know, what are you projecting it to be based on that replacement level so that we could see? I mean, I see the number, you know, kind of dropping. Well, yeah. So just to see how you're planning on doing it with those numbers.
Creighton Manning, the engineering firm, did about 100-page study on this back in February. Their plan was for a 10-year breakdown. It did outline or suggest how we should purchase over a 10-year period. That plan that was presented from them, we're already deviating from. The second purchase they recommend is all diesel. We believe that we can get more life out of the diesel buses we currently have on the longer runs because we don't have en route charging. We need to use still fossil fuel burning on, for example, the Shandaken, Ellenville, the Newburgh run. But we believe we can move some buses around. Our next purchases now, we're committed to electric for the second set of purchases. Again, the first set will be arriving in December of our first three, which will coincide with the construction we're doing currently at the UCAT facility. So I can show you what Creighton Manning did present or come up with a year ago. We're starting to deviate from it already because we want to accelerate the electric build out, the electric bus system build out. But again, we're somewhat subject to what technology is going to be available in 2, 5, 6 years, as well as the standards for the federal grants that we're able to use for some of the funding.
So Legislator Walter, just to give you a little more information on this, I've been in touch with Deputy Executive Milgram about this as well with buses because I had a hard time understanding it all. I did get a copy of that report. It is quite interesting. Correct me if I'm wrong, Deputy Executive Milgram, but the bus range on these buses are like 80 miles?
Correct.
Yeah, that was very shocking to me that the bus range.
9 to 80 currently, yeah.
Yeah, so they're very limited in the distance they could go. And the qualifying requirement that the deputy exec was mentioning was the Altoona requirements. So I just learned this afternoon by reading a little more on it. It looks like, so there is some that have already been pre-approved for that standard, but any company you want can actually apply if they meet that requirement. So if we found another vendor that their bus could meet those requirements, we could go that route as well. Just a thought there.
This will be changing, Chairman. Obviously, I think some other bus companies will be meeting the Altoona standards over the next months and years, as well as some prices will be fluctuating. At the same time, we're already seeing it with the supply chain, putting the infrastructure down at our facility now. The build out we have inside the garage is not for the en route rapid chargers. These are chargers that will take pretty much most of the evening to charge a bus. The en route chargers are meant to charge, and they're far more expensive. It's a whole pantograph that goes above the bus and a overhang that fits into. Ultimately, just for one en route charger, it's close to $1 million with a shelter and a bus station with it. I hope that answers the question. The technology and some of the requirements and the funding streams are changing, and it's kind of organic as we speak. And we're doing whatever we can to speed up the process to make sure we're the greenest fleet in the state.
I mean, it sort of does, but I think, you know, and Bert has talked about this in the past, this idea of having these five-year budget plans that are more transparent, where we have this specific goal for 5 years and that we're showing how each expenditure gets us closer to that goal. And so, you know, it's hard to sometimes see in these breakdowns how we are working towards an ultimate goal. What is that ultimate goal, and how are we planning now with what we know? And so that's all I'm asking, is for that kind of detail.
Actually, Chairman, if you have that plan handy, otherwise tomorrow I'm happy to ship it around to the legislators on this, the Craig Manning study, which essentially is our outline for the 10-year plan. But again, it changes rapidly. So,
Legislator Litz.
Yeah, I mean, I think we need to look at this a couple of ways. We have a strategic plan for bus replacement. I don't think we should be too hasty with that because, a new bridge joint comes out, it's $500,000. 4 years down the road, they're $80,000. We could replace our entire fleet tomorrow at $1 million a bus. In 5 or 6 or 7 years from now, the buses might only be $400,000. So we have to watch what we do and how we spend our money. And the longevity. The newer buses, their battery life, I mean, after whatever years it is, they have to be replaced. A few years from now, the batteries will last as long as the bus does. So the more money we spend up front means the more money we're going to spend, and then we're going to have to replace buses quicker, earlier, that are more expensive. So I think we should look at this with a strategic plan, not just jump in with both feet and buy the whole electric fleet.
Okay, thank you. Bus maintenance facility, we sort of touched on it. Okay. Hangor Bridge.
This is not a new project. It was in the plan last year. It's established as Capital 261. It's a Hangor Creek Bridge, bin number.
Sundown Bridge.
It's also not a new bridge. It's Capital 390. It is in the process right now in the town of Denton.
Are any of these so far, or any of the bridges we're doing, are they any of them red flagged yet?
Sorry.
The Sundown Bridge had red flags that our in-house crews have been able to resolve.
Mongong Kill Bridge.
It's also known as the Brunswick Bridge. It's currently in the process. It's not a new project. You guys have voted on this through the legislative process.
Samsonville Road Culvert.
Capital 540. We're shooting for construction in 2023. It's currently in design.
Salt pre-activation system.
So the first year of this is a pilot program. The intent is to potentially reduce cost of salt, but the idea is to reduce the quantity of salt the county needs. The short of it is it pretty much the salt, so it doesn't bounce off the road and sticks to the road.
Is this the brine?
It's brine made in-house, and it's sprayed onto the spinner of the trucks.
Just a suggestion that you speak with, I don't know what the answer is to this, but I would speak with the Village of Ellenville. They did go that route with the reed system. I don't know if they're still doing it. I think there were issues with using the brine that they had, but just might be worth checking into. Legislator Bartels.
This says it's the first year. Have we not done this before? This sounds so familiar to me.
We put in the plan the last few years, but because of COVID, things got delayed.
Oh, okay.
We've also used brine, I mean, on the roads, but this is actually pre-wetting the salt, which is not something.
No, I know. And I attended actually a NYSAC seminar on this, believe it, I think Legislator Litz and I did together on this subject. So I got a full hour on the pre-wetting of the salt. But I thought we had already
and
done it.
It was so exciting.
Yeah.
I don't join them.
Route 299 shoulder.
So capital, it's not a new one. Currently the unfunded county share is about $3 million to the $8 million cost. And we're still shooting for construction in 23 at this point, but we're still doing right of way acquisition.
So I did want to add just one part to this project is that we did receive, or we're anticipating receiving $3.6 million as a earmark as part of the transportation infrastructure bill. It was carried in bulk out.
I just want to say, and I say it, you know, and I will when it comes again on the floor, you know, I totally appreciate this. This is a project that will save lives. And I know we have many, many roads like this throughout the county. And so I know we're working to identify those projects. I know they're costly projects and time consuming. One thing I again want to say, just because it just popped to the top of my head, is I think that this is to the legislative colleagues. I think we really need to create a policy that as we foreclose, if and when we foreclose on properties, that we expand just because these kinds of the clearances to get the right of ways that we potentially expand the right of ways on those properties that we take in anticipation of eventually having to do it. I know it's like tiny properties against long, many miles of roads in Ulster County, but you know, the issues of pedestrians and bikers and cars competing for the same roadway is very, very challenging the county over. So it's a great project, but I know it's, you know, the top of the list of many, many more to come.
I'll add that the fact that I ride this a lot, I really appreciate it. It's not totally true that it's a shoulder widening everywhere because part of this has zero shoulder at all. So it's much appreciated.
Route 28 slope stabilization.
So this is a new project. We had a slope failure on Route 28A, and this is to fix the problem. Ideally, with soil management. Okay.
Reconstruction of various roads.
This is our annual contract for our in-house paving crew. It saves quite a bit of money for us not to contract it out.
I know this was looked at many years ago. Dave Shealy was at the county at the time. And there was discussion about purchasing a asphalt reclamation machine. It's about, I think the last cost that I remember was something like $2.9 million. But essentially it recycles the road that's there. It tears it up, it puts it through a milling thing, it puts it right back down on the road. And all you add to it is heat and the tar, I guess. I don't really know much about all of it, but I'm wondering if now with ARP money, if that's something we could explore. Because if I recall correctly, the payback on that $2.9 million was about 4 years, and then everything after that was just pure savings.
And Chairman, I know you brought this issue up before.
I mean, I'll let Brendan speak on behalf of that equipment. He's the highway superintendent.
So we currently contract out cold in-place recycling and separately another process called hot in-place recycling. I'm not knowing exactly which process you're referring to. We also contract out the reclamation of roads, which creates a new base in place.
Yeah, this is a single, it's a single machine. It's as long as a tractor trailer, I guess. I saw a demo of it upstate New York when I was on the town board, and it grinds the road up, it puts it on a conveyor belt, it goes into some type of mixing hopper thing, it heats it up with tar, I'm assuming, and then out the back end, it gets put back down on the road and rolled over, and it's as if it was brand new road. And it uses no more material than a little bit of additional tar and obviously the propane or whatever they're heating it with.
I'm happy to look into whatever technology may be of benefit to the county. It sounds similar to our hot in place recycling that we have done, where they just scarify and add emulsions to rejuvenate the road and doesn't add or take away any product.
Okay. Phoenicia Bridge.
This one we have on the books, it's quite a bit out there, but it's one of the more expensive bridges to replace, so we wanted to have it down now. So when we start doing design, you guys get an idea of the cost for this one.
Somebody approached me on this, asking if we were doing this, and I knew this was being talked about. They asked if there was a way we could have, for tourism, some type of, you know, carve-out that extended over for fishing even, you know, some form of recreation, if that could be somehow incorporated.
Talking about similar to like the Carmine Liberta Bridge in New Paltz, like an overlook?
Yes.
So if we can just note that.
Yeah, we can look into that. Yeah.
McKinsey Bridge?
This is already created. We hope to finish next year.
Highway equipment.
So this is our annual highway equipment, whatever we need to replace throughout the year.
Guide rail replacement.
This is a capital project that will be rolling to replace guide rail throughout the county. We contract this service out using capital funds.
Golden Hill Roads.
This capital we've had on the books for a while, but we pushed the years out in anticipation of us doing some heavier construction in terms of the Golden Hill Water Tower. So we didn't want to put a new road down and then have heavy equipment drive over it right away. So the idea is to replace the roads after all that construction is done.
Okay. Galeyville Bridge.
And it probably is a typo. County funding due to the project being ineligible or not being eligible?
It shouldn't have the word not. Good catch.
I'm going to proofread the whole document and give you my edits. I'm kidding.
The Galeyville Bridge.
This is another one of the more expensive bridges for us to replace. It's a few years down the road still, but we won't have it in the plan, so you guys have an idea.
I'm not familiar with where this is over the Walk Hill.
This is located in the town of Shawangunk over the Walk Hill River.
I don't know if it makes Lisa Haynes.
Yeah, I just have a quick question. I actually just today noticed that we're losing a lot of our Iron Truss bridges. These bridge replacements that we're doing, are we seeing a lot of these type of bridges with the iron trusses go away as well? I just think they're so beautiful, and I hate to see a different bridge for a replacement, but I'm just curious, are we moving away from that, or it all depends on the project?
I would say it has to depend on the project. Sometimes historic aspects come into play as far as those structures. Sometimes it's changing the hydraulic constriction of the rivers and streams where it won't be practical to put back the same type of structure.
Thank you.
Legislator Haynes, if you didn't see, Legislator Litz pointed out also the cost is a big factor too. I'm not familiar with this bridge, but I guess I'll use the same comment I used before about the Phoenicia Bridge. If it makes sense here too, perhaps a little, you know, out overlook. Sampsonville Road.
This is also known as the Fantine Kill Bridge. It's in the process planning on construction next year.
DPW Large Culvert.
This is our annual large culvert replacement program using in-house labor.
Was last year the first year this program done?
Yes.
Are these steel culverts that are being replaced? Is that what the issue is?
I would say it depends on the year, but Brendan, correct me if I'm wrong. They're mostly steel, right?
Mostly. This is basically any bridge that's less than 20 feet. So it's not called a bridge, it's called a culvert.
Yeah.
I'd just like to say that our DPW people deserve credit because, the in-house program we do saves us so much money. We get the best bang for the buck. When you go out to contract, you have to pay, the prevailing wage for unions and there's a federal process and a state process. I mean, literally, it more than doubles the cost of a project when it's let. So when we do it with in-house forces, we can literally affect twice as many repairs and replacements than more than that, than putting it out to contract. So our DPW does a good job.
DPW bridge program?
So similar to the culvert program, as Mark pointed out earlier, we plan on actually amending this year's capital to establish for 2022 bridges in December. And I just to give you guys a heads up, we'd like to put a little bit higher of a contingency than normal due to the fluctuation of steel costs right now.
Creekside Drive slope.
This is not a new project. It's slope stabilization and being in the works right now. We plan on finishing up in next year.
Legislator Walker.
Thanks. So this just reminds me of a question. So it's not really about this, but have we done a full analysis and assessment of our rivers and streams to determine potential flood zones and what kind of things we need to do in advance, knowing that our 100th year storms are now kind of like 100 per year as opposed to 100 every 100 years, and it's only going to continue and get worse. So are we assessing all of our bodies of water and identifying kind of like the bridges with the yellow, red, green, where we're going to need to start before the floods happen or more floods, building those up so that we can protect the communities that live near the water?
So in the watershed, this work has been done with the Ashokan kind of watershed group. Outside of the watershed, we can reach out. I'll reach out to the Department of the Environment and see where they were at. I know they were looking at expanding some of that work outside the watershed last year. So
I think planning has some of that work that's already done in terms of mapping out 100-year, 50-year floodplains. So Dennis would be a good resource on that as well.
Yeah, I mean, I think that pretty soon, and we should probably get ahead of the game, we're going to start seeing them on this, these capital plans. And so the more we can be proactive, you know, we could be dealing with this before people are losing their entire homes. So yeah.
Some reason I couldn't unmute. Okay, sorry about that. Bridge superstructure repairs.
So we started this last year and it did so well that we would like to make it an annual recurring one where we use a combination of contracts and in-house labor in order to do heavier preventive maintenance on bridges to get us more of a bang for our buck. In this case, it's superstructure repairs.
Legislator
Cahill. Thank you. So I noticed there's a list of multiple bridges throughout the county and it's spread out over 5 years. Does that mean that you'll be doing one bridge a year or some parts of each bridge each year? How's that going to work out there?
I think the idea is to get us this. We will come to you with next year to establish this and with the bridges we'd be touching, but the idea is to get as much done as we can in the time we have.
Yes, I would recommend both bridges in the town of Kingston. Thank you very much.
Thanks. Don, was this the project that you talked to us about where you talked about the yellow flags and the red flags and trying to get ahead of that
bridge
list?
That's the bridge flag response capital. We have that one in here, and that's coming up soon.
Oh, okay. So the two different. Okay.
Yep.
Thank you.
Reiterate. These bridges, I think we anticipate finishing in 2022-23, and others could be.
Yes, agreed.
And if this program works well, we can do away with the other one because there won't be any red or yellow flags.
Sure.
Sure, Herb. There you go.
Bridge superstructure.
Same thing as the last one, except substructure instead of superstructure.
And the bridge flag response.
This is the one Tracy's talking about where we ask for a pot of money at the beginning of the year so that we have funds to go out as quickly as we can to address yellow and red flags as they come up.
Legislator Bartels.
So what were we doing before this?
We were using operating funds, and as costs escalated, we decided to put it into the capital plan.
All right. I feel like this is excellent. I mean, and I think it's shown to be really positive. So I commend your work on that.
The Bennett Road Bridge.
This one carries Bennett Road over to Rontow Creek in the town of Warsing, looking through construction next year.
It's closed, correct?
Yeah, that's correct.
Yeah. This one I do know is heavily used for fishing. So this one, again, if there's something we could do, I'm very familiar with this bridge. Asphalt overlay, various routes.
So this is a every 3 year capital. We did it this year. So the next one hits in 2024. We have anticipated costs with inflation based off of what we paid for this year. But Brennan can get into the more science behind it if you want, but it allows us to catch up in terms of roads that need to be addressed.
Okay. ARC mental health and addiction.
Oh, look at that timing. give me 1 second. So we had a single meeting on this portion of it with Legislator Walter and Haynes and the chairman. Our intention here is to build out a center for crisis stabilization, as well as co-locating a lot of our mental health and addiction recovery services. I think that through our discussions with the working group, we have to keep this part of it going. I'd say they're in the early stages, but the intention is clear. I think there is wide support for that crisis stabilization center piece.
So a couple of things. one is just sort of semantics, because you refer to it as a crisis support center, not a stabilization center, and you say for experiencing acute mental health crisis, but it's mental health and substance abuse crisis. So the language should reflect what it is. The other question is, I mean, I recognize that this project, this was put together before our last legislative vote, but, you know, I assume the respite houses are going to need a capital plan as well. Or are they, or is it, I mean, because this is for one building. And so what's the plan for the respite houses?
I think we have to meet on that and discuss it more. We don't have a project on that yet. So I think more discussion needs to be had on that.
Right. So, great. So I just ask that you change it to crisis stabilization and make sure you have substance abuse listed.
What was that, substance use?
You have a crisis support center for those experiencing acute mental health crisis. It's a crisis stabilization center for those experiencing an acute mental health or substance abuse crisis.
Got it.
And this is Pepe.
You like kitchen and laundry?
I see the shirts you have on it.
The undersheriff's here, and Melody Brooks. Sheriff logged off. This is a new capital project to replace the main laundry in the facility after a fire we had in 2019. It offers fire suppression on the dryers, and it also replaces a tilt skillet in the kitchen that was that's been here since the building was built.
Fort Security Grant?
Fort Security Grant was a grant that we applied for this year in hopes to get from FEMA for three different purchases. We were only awarded one purchase recently for $25,000, so I don't know if we want to remove this one or leave it for the $25,000 instead of the $138,000.
You were only approved for the one purchase, or that's the total amount that they're willing to give us?
They gave us the $25,000 for one of the three that we applied for. We were only awarded one of the grants.
Gotcha. Okay. Legislator Bartels.
Which one did you receive?
We got the upgrade in the nav system.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Are we going to change this to reflect that?
We'll work with the sheriff's office to provide an amendment to the program.
Thank you.
Yep.
Countywide radio system.
This is all part of the interoperability for countywide radio system.
Legislative Bartels.
Do we know, or can you, and you don't have to get it right this minute, but what is this year's allocation for specifically?
I believe it's building the tower site out in Socrates, but I will follow up with Steve Peterson in Everett.
Yeah, and maybe if when you have it, maybe if we can detail that in this capital, because this just provides a general overall. So maybe if we can somewhere include this year's detail.
Legislator Cahill.
Yes, this is another project that was reviewed in our committee meeting last week, where IS came in and explained that, and also DPW came in and explained this one, that they are going to be doing a countywide radio system, right?
Just a couple of comments on this. So I know we've talked about this with the lease agreements. We do that because supposedly the service on the radios would cost far more than a lease would if we were to purchase them. I'm wondering if we've ever explored, and even if it's not enough for us to do it ourselves, but do it with some of the municipalities, actually employ a technician to work for the county repairing our radios, and we start buying them. I have a hard time believing that these very high costs, I just have a hard time believing it, that the lease is a better option for this.
Actually, this is the interoperability. So this is the towers.
and I believe it's building 3 to 4 new tower sites. This is not like covering the lease or purchase of radios themselves.
I understand that. I'm making a general comment.
Got it.
This is marking it, but legislative retails.
Yeah, I was just going to ask Mark, when you come back with the details, since we're a substantial amount of the way into this project, could you come back with sort of not just this year's detail, but push it out over the next 2 years so that we can sort of understand where the project is going? Thank you.
Okay. Black Creek upgrade.
This is the sheriff's office, and it is on hold at the moment. We're awaiting a bid to come back on November 10th for the electrical portion of the upgrade, and then we will start the project.
Thank you. Site work improvements.
For the community college, in the description, it highlights what infrastructure projects will be happening, but it's just an overall multi-year site work. Similar to our bridge projects, this is just a overarching site work improvement capital.
Same thing with the bridge, with the roof replacement?
Correct.
And a master plan?
This will be for actually creating their master plan.
Okay. The infrastructure improvements.
Same thing.
Yeah. Equipment and technology. Legislator Walter.
Sorry, I feel like I missed something. Did that for roofs? Did we finish roofs? For the community college?
This is an overarching roof replacement. They highlight which buildings are in here.
It's the right.
Center. Yeah.
So my big question, of course, is solar?
Yeah, I mean, they are doing a full feasibility study for each of these roofs. I think, if I remember one of the committee meetings, Jamie had said maybe the Dormitory Association is helping them with some feasibility studies, but I know at each time they replace a roof, they are looking to see feasibility of solar.
Solar and also wind, solar, not possible, green roofs?
That I can't speak to for them on the college side, but we can add it as a comment.
Please do. Thanks.
The Veterans Cemetery renovations.
This is an ongoing project. We're unfortunately needing to expand our Veterans Cemetery. Over time. We ran into some archaeological issues and had to go through a phase 3 study to make sure there is no artifacts, etc.
Gotcha. County office building.
This is a new capital. It's a few years out. We want to have it on the books. It's to replace the water sewer lines in the county office building.
These are the interior lines, or this is the lateral from the main?
Probably both, but definitely interior.
The elevator upgrade?
Similarly, it's a few years out. New capital project to redo the elevators on the interior county office building. Obviously, they're cramped, so it's going to require design in order for us to figure out what's the best option.
Law enforcement center, any new upgrades?
I'm
sorry, legislative chaos.
Yeah, that's okay. So real quick, on the county office building. So now that building's starting to get up in years, right? I mean, how old is it now? 50, 60 years old, that building? And so are you guys looking at the life expectancy of this building? And,
honestly, we continue to keep pushing this project out because we're just not sure that it's going to ever come to fruition. We're looking at it.
and evaluating just what you're saying, Legislator Cahill, whether it really makes sense to put it forward.
Yeah, I mean, at some point, you know, you invest so much in a building before you're putting, you know, good money after bad, right? Yeah. Thank you.
Are we talking about the county building or Enterprise West? I'm sorry, bad joke. Sorry.
Right, John, I have to go now. Sorry.
There you go.
Are we talking boats or cars? I'm lost.
Exactly. Legislator Bartels.
This is serious. So you're talking about the elevator. You're evaluating whether or not to do the elevator project. What? I just lost which project you're evaluating whether or not to do based on the life of the building.
It's not just based on the life of the building. I don't think we're planning on selling the county office building anytime soon, but this is for a freight elevator, and we've made it this far without adding this. Mm-hmm. This is major work to the rear of the building, adding a freight elevator and other things. It's a costly project, and we're not ready to say we want to completely take this out of the program yet, but we're also not ready to move it forward, which is why we put it in
2023. Okay, thank you.
Okay. Law enforcement energy upgrades. I know I quickly touched it.
So the last thing that's in this capital, it's been on the books for years, is the boiler replacement. That's currently out for design.
Trudy Farber Building.
This is just a general TLC, get the building a little better looking, fix up some areas that we need to inside of it.
Structurally, the building is okay?
I'm sorry, I couldn't hear you.
The building structurally is okay?
To the best of our knowledge, I would say yes.
It's definitely a depressing building to walk into, that's for sure. New tax system software.
We put this on hold because of COVID. Hopefully go out for an RFP either late year, first of the year. We hope to get the RFP going and then get this thing moving.
Public Works security improvement.
This is a capital project to fund security improvements across various county buildings using a consultant to come in to tell us what our best options are.
You know if there's any discussion with our insurance carrier for reduction?
I don't believe we've even approached the topic yet, right, Mark?
Okay. It might be a good idea to have that discussion at the same time or maybe even just before having the consultant do the work because some insurances will give you discounts if you hit certain points on their system when you do security upgrades. They'll tell you what they are ahead of time, which will help to steer the direction of certain upgrades that you can do.
Noted. Thank you.
All right. Legislative Rentals.
Do we already have the recommendations from the security consultant?
We haven't even established this capital yet.
Okay. So the we're expecting to spend $150,000 on a consultant.
Yes.
Pricing. I mean, this is a capital that's been kicking around for years. I know when Legislator Lauren, I think, was in the legislature, we had put this forward. It was, you know, recommended at one time by the sheriff. There's a lot of things that go along with this, and we believe we need a full study to design the most appropriate system.
Salt shed roof replacement fabric.
It's just to replace the roofs of the salt sheds. I mean, there's not much more to it than that.
Good. Roof replacement program.
So the big ticket items next year are the record storage building and UCLEC. So we don't really know how much UCLEC is going to cost us yet. We put $5 million in there, but we have to wait for the bid to come back. We are doing solar feasibility studies for both buildings. We're working on those currently with the Department of Environment. And then design first and construction after that.
All
The question on the UCLEC, what was the expectancy, life expectancy of those roofs on the building when it was built? Anybody know?
About double what we got.
Say again, sorry.
Probably about double what we got, like
30 years. Would
think. 30 years would be average.
That's not 30 years old, right?
15. I think in this meeting last year, I said the gift that keeps on giving, so I'll say it once.
Yeah, Legislative Arts House.
Yeah, I mean, and now we've come to find that they were leaking from the get-go. I think that there was, you know, concern about being upfront about that, given how many millions of dollars over the construction was. So they chose not to tell us until this current sheriff pointed out that there were buckets everywhere and had been for years and years.
Yeah, I'm just, I just can't understand how, you know, I mean, a typical roof is minimum of 20 year for a flat roof, 25 is, you know, an upgrade, and then there's a 30 year warranty on it. I don't understand how this roof would not be warranted by the installer. I just don't follow that.
We probably pay for a 50 year roof, John, quite honestly.
Not even sure if the companies who constructed the roof.
It wouldn't matter. I said the installer, but I didn't mean that. I meant the manufacturer. The manufacturer of the, so we have a drawing a blank on the name of the roof company here. It's one of the well-known brands, Armstrong, I think it is. There's a sticker right on the upstairs of our door that goes out to the roof that says the warranty number and the number of years and when it expires. And that's who we would call, not the installer of it. It would be the manufacturer of the product.
Like 2000 when this was built or whenever there was some time where there was some roof manufacturing companies that were around and popping up and they're gone because the roofs didn't last. I don't think this is the only building that's having this issue with longevity. I mean, we can go back and look at the manufacturer and just make sure there's no warranty, but I
relocation of various departments.
Yeah, so this is an ongoing capital. I don't know. I mean, other than Board of Elections, which we know we're going to move, and a few others off the Hill, I think that's the bulk of the 165 anticipated for 2022.
Legislator Walter.
Or prior year, sorry.
This speaks to something Legislator Guevaras had brought up a while ago of identifying, you know, do we actually, for all of the places that we rent, do we have space for, and if we don't, should we actually be buying property in order to move them? So does this include any of that process or assessment? I mean, I know that it's been assessed. I think the comptroller even assessed it, but how do we assure that we don't ultimately have any departments in rented space?
I mean, I don't know if someone from DPW has a comment on that. I'm not sure we can assure that we will never have anybody in rented space. Sometimes that is cost effective. But I know, you know, we are like continuously looking to see if there are buildings that would make sense for the county to purchase for expansion of departments or relocation.
Yeah, I mean, I think we should have a serious discussion about whether or not the county is ripe for another space analysis, because I think that, you know, there are a lot of these capital projects that relate to space. You know, the discussion of moving departments into Enterprise West, this departmental move, and it all seems to happen. I know it's not in a vacuum for you all, but for us, we get information at a very late date. And we don't have a full picture of the puzzle. And frankly, the last time that a real space study was undertaken was many years ago. And, you know, the work has changed. Departments have changed. I think it was even Legislator Litz at one of these meetings that basically said, like, this is the time, like, we need to do this. I don't want to put words in your mouth, Herb, but I think you did say that. And so, you know, here we are at budget time, and I think that, you know, we need to have a discussion potentially about allocating monies in this budget for that purpose, because it's been a long time coming. So I'm just going to put it out there, and it's something I think that we ought to be discussing.
I think this capital would make sense if it was the will of the legislature to add funding for a space allocation study. I think it was 2007 was the last one that a real study was done, revolving around family court. Rick Alfondre did a small scale kind of feasibility space allocation study, but not definitely wasn't countywide.
Record storage building.
So this does not include the roof, but it's a general TLC upgrade for across the building for areas that need to be touched up and redone.
Quarry complex renovations.
Same idea, a few years down the road, update, renovate as needed.
Pump house scent control grades.
So this we pushed out because we want to do it in conjunction with the Golden Hill Water Tower, as the water tower feeds into this. So based off the design that comes back for that, what type of water tower we use, the generator and the pump house itself may need to be redesigned.
Bridge. Greens Bridge.
Mm-hmm. We continue to, this is being pushed out. It does need some work. We're trying to also identify to see if there's any New York State preservation funds for this.
That's the Bartels.
I think definitely we should be aggressively pursuing any funds that might exist, but I'd be very interested to know whether or not and I understand why we pushed it out before, but whether or not the pushing out is going to result in greater costs. You know, I know that this isn't a bridge that, you know, functionally we have anything really heavily going over it, but it's a historical bridge, and it's under our care and control. So it just concerns me that if we keep pushing it, we're going to get to the point where what might have been a cost X to fix is now going to cost X times X because of deterioration. So I would love to get a sense of where we are currently, how serious the slope stabilization issues are, and how serious the deteriorated wood is, and what we've done thus far to find out about any other outside funding.
So I'll ask DPW to correct me if I'm wrong, but if there's major issues with wood, I believe we've taken money out of operating from time to time to replace. Again, I could be wrong, so I'll let Brendan or Don speak to that. We do have people evaluate it on a semi-regular basis, so.
Yeah, every couple of years we've had the consultant go out and take a look at it. It's not deteriorating at a rapid pace. We would like to get it addressed, though.
Personal computer replacements.
This is just project they started this year. They're just going to finish at the beginning of next year. There's a kind of delay with some PCs, so it's just pushed till beginning of next year.
Since we're pushing that far out, are we not better served by not going with Windows 10 and waiting? I think Windows 11 is out. If it's not, it's rolling out pretty soon.
I mean, I think it's more about just the general hardware to even get it. We're so far behind on it, and it's so hard to get PCs or laptops that I think that's more the issue. But I think we can certainly ask Alan if that's a factor.
Thank you. Information and technology upgrades.
So this is some of the network infrastructure, I believe switches, that have reached end of life. And we've spent the bulk of this, had a little bit left next year.
HVAC weatherization of various buildings.
So this is our capital project that we would come to you and establish a new number every year. Similar to steel, very large lead times on HVAC units right now. Rob, correct me if I'm wrong, the next building we're looking at doing is UCOB. Right after we finish up UPLEX boilers, UCOB would be the next building to address.
Well, right now, Trudy Resnick is in design.
Right.
And then the Hall of Records, and then UCOB, yes.
So that's the idea. We have a current capital open, so we would either come to amend that or establish a new number based off of what we need.
Golden Hill water tank.
In short, the useful life of the water tank, we're at it. It's not showing signs that it needs, it's failing, but we're there, so it should be in our mind in terms of replacement.
Is this a glass line tank or it's just steel?
It is not a glass line tank currently.
Okay. Fairground improvements.
This is slated for next year. It has to do, it's really a two sub-project type improvement. One is for the electric and a northern campground, and one is for the sewage and wastewater improvements that is going to be required in order for us to maintain our permit for the facility.
EV charging stations?
This one's being facilitated by the Department of the Environment, but it's more or less to charge to install more charging stations.
How many stations is it going to install?
4 fleet, 4
community
located.
So a total of 8, 4 for our fleet, 4 for the community, right?
For a total cost of $317,000?
No, sorry, that's, I believe, this year.
56 altogether, right? Yeah.
Sorry, say that again.
56 ports.
Yes.
But we can follow back up on this one, but I'm just looking. And yeah, maybe 8 additional charging stations, right?
Okay. I mean, I don't know how we're getting to that number, 317, even at 56 of them. We're having 2 of them installed here. The cost for each is about $2,000.
It also has to do with getting the electric to the stations. It's not just the port itself. We used to do that work in-house, but it's the ones we have now are a little past our capacity.
Enterprise West Redevelopment Project.
This is currently established. As you're aware, you get a monthly expense report from us. There's a $399,000 capital that's established that we can't expend funds out of because we do not have a owner's interest in the building at the moment.
Let's say Bertels.
Are we going to modify it then? I mean, this is projecting $1.4 million in spending in 2023 and $529,000 in 2022.
Yeah, I mean, I think that ideally, let me follow back up with you on that. Obviously, we don't have an interest, so we'll bring you back in.
Okay.
Government Operations Center.
This is for the siting, design, and construction of a new government operations facility for the emergency management and PSAP.
Dominion voting system.
Board of Elections, new voting machines.
DSS basement restoration.
This is currently in design. Our basement at DSS is taking on water. We're currently figuring out what the best option is, if it will still be able to be used as office space or if it's going to be restricted to just storage and communal space.
Is it groundwater coming from below or is it seepage coming from up top?
We're still determining the exact thing, but it seems to be, Rob, right, groundwater coming from below.
Yes, groundwater coming from below.
Yeah, I mean, to Eve's point earlier, let's say Walter's point earlier about, you know, changing of streams and you know, the environment itself, this is a problem that's going to start creeping up on everybody. People who did not have problems in the past with groundwater, they're going to see some people will start experiencing it. We're experiencing it here as well. Let's say Gail.
Yeah, I was going to say, I recall that when that facility was first opened, before it was fully operational, that was a problem then. Okay. When I was in the last time, and it must just have been resurfacing, you know, but it was, this is not a new problem for that building, as I recall, right?
No.
Development court, LED lighting retrofit.
Another project being facilitated by the Department of the Environment to have contractors come in and replace the internal lights with LED fittings.
Is this being done through any NYSERDA or NYSPA programs?
I think the design portion of it, but the actual upgrades are not.
Courthouse parking lot improvements?
So our parking lot at the courthouse is flooding when it rains. This is to address the problem and fix it.
Courthouse exterior.
So this is an exterior maintenance, including the cupola of the building, and it is slated for next year. It's currently designed, right, Rob?
Correct.
Yeah. And as you can imagine, with a historic building like this, a big hunk of money needed to maintain the exterior of it. The cartels?
This is also the gift that keeps on giving. I have a pile like 10 inches
exactly.
Deep. And I'm going to just call up Jeanette Provenzano. And yeah. We're still talking about it.
I will say next year is, well, would have been the 225th birthday of Sojourner Truth. And I think there's some opportunities here to at least potentially replace the plaque out in front or do some other things. So. Hopefully there will be some funds in this to help associate.
Digitization and electronic conversion.
County clerk, digitizing records, digitalizing records.
It's 100% an outside contract. We're not having our staff do this work.
Correct. I know they've done some of the work with like having things go from microfiche, but this capital is fully outside.
Okay. County storage and warehouse facility.
This is to site and build a new storage facility for both buildings and grounds and the sheriff's equipment.
Central auto vehicles.
Our typical fleet vehicle replacement.
Car building renovations.
This is another TLC renovation, a few years out still.
Voiceville substation.
This is it's building improvements, concrete slab work, amongst other things.
Much less than your 17-hour prediction.
It was a prediction. It was based on actual numbers. Well, you guys,
I had the calculator. I couldn't answer while you guys were talking. And I tried to figure out.
We were on that estimate. Legislator Gavaris.
Is there a cost of expediting this?
Yes. All right, the debt schedules. Anything? All right, I'll just say that, and I know I've said this to several people individually, but also I said it, I think, at a Ways and Means meeting. You know, there's several bonds that we have out that have a higher interest rate that we can pay off now and save ourselves a bunch of money. Legislator Archer.
Yeah, and I recall when I think we were in caucus with the county exec, he assured us that we were going to get a detailed and a rigorous analysis, I think was his exact words, of, you know, are there opportunities to pay off some of the lower hanging fruit on this? So we're waiting for that rigorous analysis. Do we have a timing of when we think we're going to get that?
I don't right now, but as soon as I get it done, I'll definitely provide it.
That would be great. Particularly, we'd like to hopefully see it before we finalize any of the budget and as we're going through amendments, et cetera. So it'd be helpful to have it then. Thank you.
Anything else to discuss? Okay.
I'll make a motion for adjournment.
Thank you, Legislator.
3 hours. Good job. Hours.
We managed to do it. Second on that?
Tough on this one.
Second.
Okay, Bartels. All those in favor of adjournment?
Aye.
Thank you all.
Thank you.
Night, everybody. Be safe. Stay healthy.
All right. You too, Legislator.